Mr. McGue, if you come up, we've got a quorum. Thank you, Council. We will call our City Council meeting for January 9, 2019 to order. It is the first one that we're having in the afternoon and the evening. Thank you for being here. This was Mr. Medrano's suggestion, and I hope it works out good. We're excited about doing this. We're going to begin with our invocation and followed by the Pledge of Allegiance led by Ms. Gates. Our invocator this morning is Reverend Robert Earl Hamby III, and he's the pastor of Mercy Presbyterian Church in Dallas, where he served for 5 years. Native of Greenville, South Carolina, ergo the bow tie, and he's earned a Master of Divinity from the Covenant Theological Seminary. He's previously a campus minister at Furman and a campus minister for Reform University Fellowship at TCU, assistant pastor at Providence Presbyterian Church in Dallas. He's married to Kendall, who's currently the art teacher at L.L. Hotchkiss Elementary, and they have two children, a freshman in Mississippi, Elizabeth, and Robert, a freshman at J.J. Pierce. Thanks so much, Pastor, for coming in. All rise.
It's a great honor to offer the invocation today. Let us pray. Lord God, we bring our prayers before you this day because we know that you hear the prayers of your people and that you care about our needs and our desires. For you are the Lord, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in love. We thank you today for the countless ways that you bless us and the good gifts that you so graciously give to us. We thank you particularly for these men and women whom you have called and appointed to serve and lead the city of Dallas. Lord, thank you for the gifts, talents, and abilities you have given to each one of them, for their wisdom and discernment, for their heart and love, for the welfare of the city of Dallas, for their commitment, patience, and perseverance to do justice and to love mercy for the good of our city. Lord, I pray that you would bless each one of these men and women, both in their public life and in their private life. Lord, satisfy them with good things, meet their needs, encourage, equip, and empower them to do the work you have called them to do. Help them to rule with wisdom and compassion so that the poor and the powerless may be treated fairly and with justice. Open their ears to the cries for help from those caught in cycles of poverty, abuse, or violence. Give them wisdom to know how to best respond and courage to do the right thing, even when it may not be popular. Under their rule, may the people of Dallas flourish. May there be lasting peace and plenty for all. In Jesus' name, amen.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. We will take our afternoon speakers.
Good afternoon. We did have a change to your speakers, a cancellation. Therefore, your first five registered speakers will be Richard Sheridan, Robert Ceccarelli, Yafu Shamshid Dean, Dolores Phillips, and Taylor Toynes. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor at the podium. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my left and your right, as it will affect your speaking time. First speaker, Richard Sheridan.
Is that illustration up? Can you see it?
Not yet, but they'll get it up. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Sheridan.
Again, I appreciate being here. Happy New Year, and hopefully it'll be a happy New Year for our homeless, who definitely still need much help. The picture is of a woman, a black woman, who has basically been living across the street from Neiman Marcus. And the contrast between her situation in Neiman Marcus is quite, what's the word, hypocritical or just magnifies the situation. I've seen her six or seven times during the last 2 weeks, 40-degree weather up until 11 o'clock at night, and I found out that she does go into the homeless shelters, but she decides basically to live here. And it brings up the issue, why is it that she doesn't want to stay in the shelters? And she's part of the problem, and maybe the shelters are part of the problem as well. So I put together a list, and we need both quality improvements and quantity improvements at our shelter. And I know it's one of the most difficult tasks to accomplish, to provide shelter to all the various aspects of our homeless, the chemically addicted, the mentally ill, women and children. It's just extremely difficult to address all those issues. But the question is, since Dallas does regulate, I understand, group homes, why can't Dallas regulate homeless shelters, have some minimum standards for homeless shelters, and can there be improvements if Dallas does regulate the homeless shelters? So as an example, lowering shelter barriers, and some shelters do this. Lower shelter barriers, allowing drunks and addicts to enter as long as they don't create a disturbance. Better they be in a shelter or maybe in a certain area than being out in the street. Have a shelter exclusively for the mentally ill. Stop the religious indoctrination, and that certainly goes on. Protect homeless from thefts with lockers to provide secure belongings. Protect homeless from abusive treatment from other homeless. Require a Dallas police officer to be at each homeless shelter, perhaps not all, but some kind of security. Require a Dallas have outdoor areas like the bridge for those that don't like to be inside with the claustrophobia of it. Minimize homeless waiting outside for a bed. Adjust entry hours for working homeless, and require a homeless jobs program where applicable. And the quality improvements, Mayor, we were at a forum recently. I think you agree that we need perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 more homeless shelter beds. And how do we pay for it? I brought this up a couple, three times here and the commissioner's court. I believe we went directly to the public. We basically communicated to them what the need is. Forget about taxing them, increasing taxes, whatever. A direct to the public, call it Change for Change, a major retail outlet, 7-Eleven, whatever, that the people would basically say, sure, I'll give 25 cents, I'll give 35 cents. And you'd be amazed how much money could be generated in such a program, 30, 40, 50 million a year. And we're looking at about 30, 40 million a year to take care of the homeless. And if we can afford $250 million for our parks, we certainly can afford 20 or 30 million a year directly from the people. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Sheridan.
Robert Ceccarelli.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mayor Rawlins, I was at the meeting at the Omni with the homeless people 2 weeks ago. I have to say, sir, I never believed you would want to sabotage the homeless. The reason why I say this, I was expecting you to speak about the report of the homeless. All you said was, with the 550 people there, you said, we're working with you and we're going to continue to do it. That's all you said, sir. These are 550 people. You should have gave a report of what's going on with the housing and the other problems with the homeless. And again, last month, no one showed up at the meeting. If you like the homeless, you would show up to the meetings. How many times do I have to say it, Mayor? And also, I just want to say that in the Dallas Observer, different subject, it talked about the city manager's office killing the homeless. Mentioned a specific name. At the member, Mr. Broadnax, or Mr. Mayor, I would hope that you look into this very, very seriously. This person, city manager, has gotten a free pass on this. There were 7 locations. They were all turned out by the city manager's office for buildings for the homeless. They didn't say why, but Mr. Schultz was very clear that this city has no care about the homeless for years, and it continues. Mr. Mayor, whatever is going on with you, I would certainly hope the next 4 months you show an attitude like you first got here as a mayor when you were at a homeless bar. There's nothing there, sir. How many times? I spoke to your office how many times with your administrative assistant. She's very smart. I like her when I talk. But it's just, you gave up, sir. And with the city manager's office, Mr. Broadnax, please look into the person that was in the newspaper, that the memo, and look into it, please. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Homeless Solutions Department. All they've done is add 50 beds or mattresses at the bridge. It's been reports there's been more chaos there since they had the beds or the mattresses. The Citizens Homeless Commission was against it. They voted for it. But that's all the Homeless Solutions has done the last couple years is that. And also, they're going tomorrow, and all they're going to talk about is inclement weather. You've got to be kidding me. There are more problems than inclement weather, which happens very, very small percentage here in Dallas. You're just doing bits and pieces, but you have nothing on the table. I asked Monica. She has nothing to offer when in front of Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance. Nothing. Shaletra keeps on hanging up on me. Shaletra Short, and ignores what I talk about. And the last thing is the bridge. Mr. Mayor, you heard about the 10 clients complaining about the physical and verbal assaults of the staff members. It happened last month, 2 months ago. They reported the same thing at the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance at the library. Same problems, Mayor. What's going on? I mean, I don't know what else to say. There's just nothing. There's no interest. And next month, we'll be talking about boarding homes, Mr. Griggs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yafiu Shamshiyadeen.
Yafiel Shamsuddin. I'm the son of Abdullah Musi Shamsuddin, my father. Teach a child in the way they should go, and when they get old, they'll never depart from it. So many times, often, we as youth, we're given the responsibility, of course, to pay respect, pay homage to our elders. There are many elders in this community that have been a bedrock of the community. They have worked hard all of their lives. They have struggled to bring progress to the city. And one in which I speak homage to is Marvin E. Crenshaw. There wouldn't be a city councilman on this horseshoe had it not been for the contributions of Mr. Marvin E. Crenshaw. So I read into the record a proclamation written by the Marvin E. Crenshaw Commemoration Committee. It says, whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw was born January 10, 1946 in Austin, Texas. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw is a product of Austin Independent Schools District, Wichita, Kansas School District, and the St. Louis, Missouri School District. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw is a graduate of his beloved L.C. Anderson High School in 1965. Whereas in his freshman year at Texas Southern University, Marvin E. Crenshaw received his draft notice to serve in the U.S. Army in 1965. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw served in the U.S. Army from 1965 to 1968 and, of course, received an honorable discharge. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota to attend college and met his true love, the Black Panther Party. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw was one of two plaintiffs in the Voting Rights Act lawsuit, with himself and Roy H. Williams produced what we have before us today, which is the 14-1 form of city government. Whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw is a recognized father of 14-1. And also, whereas Marvin E. Crenshaw was selected the most influential person in Dallas, Texas, according to D Magazine in 1990. I just wanted to read into the record, of course, the contribution of this man who has served the community for 40 or more years. A man who is very responsible for a lot of people here today, of course, to sit on the council. And I want to pay homage to him and also Roy H. Williams. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dolores Phillips.
Dolores Phillips, 3101 Luxor Way, Dallas, Texas, 75233. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I would reiterate these words that Mr. Ceccarelli said. I humbly suggest to you, Mayor Rawlings, that you begin caring and that you have time to rectify wrongs that begin in your tenure here, and I pray that you do not let them carry over once you leave, because now it's a civil rights attorney involved. I'm going back and having him to please reopen those cases at OCR, United States Department of Justice. Federal Bureau of Investigation, United States District Court, Federal Court. I want to say this. First and foremost, I would like to thank Mayor Pro Tem Casey Thomas for hearing me. You were the first. And beyond your race, I say thank you because you were the first. Let me say this. There's a lot of Me Too stories, bizarre Me Too stories going around, mainly speaking of men. I'm surviving the females of Team Open heinous, malicious sexual harassment where they believe they have the audacity over here to harass to get, quote, open, unquote, and simultaneously over here tell Me Too stories. What you need to do is very important to understand if you're going to start saving these children at these colleges is to teach them the sexual behavior of the do's and don'ts and not to get caught up. With these females who partake in open, they literally show that the victims are the accusers and the accused are all victims, one and one in the same. When I was taken to Green Oaks, Mayor Rollins is yet to acknowledge that he prearranged that meeting 2 to 3 weeks prior. He's yet to acknowledge that Ms. Valise Thorne, who has since passed October 2017, went to retrieve those documents from downstairs. She never brought them back to me. That meeting was from 9 a.m. to approximately 11:15, 11:20. They only released five-minute clips, two of which overlapped in time, which was the same clips they released and stamped a different time stamp. When I went with a 3.0. I went sane. I went to Green Oak sane. She said, well, why are you here? First, she said, is it voluntarily? I said, no, ma'am. She said, why do you think you're here? I said, as a bullying tactic to inflict fear, to prey on the fear, and then to have cooperation by fear from me. The only thing that I told her was that it was to obstruct justice by intercepting court documents that you knew that I was going to pick up and retrieve immediately after that meeting. Less than 6 weeks later, after that meeting, I graduated with the same 3.0. Whatever your justifications is for relentlessly, unlawfully violating me, I'm going to give it to you back in peace and truth. For every Me Too bizarre story that has been told that is true against any male or female, they're all victims raised, bred, taught, and built to be so by the original system of Jim Crow. All of it's important because you battle me with your inhumanness, and I'm not the first because you do police officers, law enforcement, judges, city employees, and Dallas County employees the same. I'm going to give it back to you in peace and truth.
Thank
I'm no better than your daughter, your
Thank
mother,
you.
Your son, your brother,
Thank
your
you.
Father, your grandmother. Please make rectify your right, rectify your wrong, Mr. Rollins.
Thank
Acknowledge
you.
That you prearranged
Thank you.
That meeting.
Thank
Release
you.
The video of me using hands.
Thank you.
Taylor Toynes.
Good afternoon. Taylor Toynes, 1818 Matagorda Drive. Today, I'm here to talk about history and preservation of the community that my family, my elders come from, which is 10th Street, the historic district, and Freedmanstown. First and foremost, I want y'all to understand and know that my intentions are pure and my intentions are positive in all ways. I love Dallas, born and raised here, lived in Oak Cliff my entire life. But today, I want to talk to y'all about a neighborhood that's near and dear to me, as I stated. Growing up as a child, my great-grandmother lived on Betterton, and I would spend many days on her porch with my grannies, my granny, my aunts, and other community members just talking about the neighborhood and their lives. But what I never saw in that community was anything honoring the history of why that town existed. I didn't even know that 10th Street was a freedman's town started by freed slaves until, I don't know, maybe when I was in college. And that's a problem, and that's something that I don't want to continue to happen to that community going forward. I'm all for development. It's something that I don't want to stop. I turned 30 years old last month, and I want to see my city grow. I appreciate the growth of my city. But when it comes to communities such as 10th Street, it is important that we preserve the history and the culture of that community. 130 years ago, a man named Anthony Boswell was deeded a lot in 10th Street, 1888. That's history. None of the young people in that community really know about that. I just learned about it myself. And that's something that needs to be taught. That story needs to be told. And what I know, and with the Deck Park and development of the zoo, all that's beautiful. But what we can't have is that community to be forgotten, that history to be forgotten. When we think of systemic and racist policies that have taken place in the city of Dallas, 10th Street is a perfect example of that. 10th Street exists because of systemic racism from the country, the United States. They have freed slaves. Slavery was an issue that has plagued my people then and still does to this day. It's important that we recognize that and that it, so we don't allow it to happen again. I really believe that the culture of that community can be preserved in many different ways. And the best way to do that is listening to the community members. My aunt is still a leader within that community, Patricia Cox. If you have any questions or ideas, we all are willing to sit down and talk about those things with you. And this is tough for me because it's painful. When I think of the history that my ancestors had to deal with just to be able to get a home, 1888 is not long after slavery. And that town exists now. I'm asking you all to be sure and be mindful, especially my African-American council members, of to preserve the history of our ancestors that started that town. Thank you all.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Twains, for all you do for the city of Dallas. Appreciate it.
This includes your beginning of meeting speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item 1, approval of minutes of the December 12, 2018 City Council meeting.
A motion second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Before we move to your consent agenda, we do have an individual who has signed up to speak on consent agenda item 26, Ryan Barr. Mr. Barr is coming forward. Mr. Barr, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
My name is Ryan Barr, residing at 4801 Pack Saddle Way, Flower Mound, Texas, 75028. The regional director for Boundary Medical, a longstanding vendor and partner with the City of Dallas for medical supplies. I'm referencing line 26 on today's consent agenda regarding medical supplies as initiated by the fire department. As you can see in the documents provided, there were an exceptional number of issues with the bid from the outset that lasted to the end. The last 20, at least 20 of 34 categories had issues in question from the beginning. Boundary Medical and several other vendors brought this and many other concerns forth during the pre-bid meeting, at which there was no member of the fire department present, which is highly unusual. For this bid, there were a total of 3 separate bid sheets published, along with a total of 7 addenda speaking to its confusion. The final bid sheet retained many of its original concerns, including disposable supplies being listed in equipment categories, items listed in one group when they actually belonged in another, and several items that are not representative of actual fire department usage at all. Our request for a second pre-bid meeting with the fire personnel actually in attendance was denied, and I ask why. During the course of this bid, there have been numerous personnel changes within the fire EMS administration, as well as within EMS supply ordering. These changes, combined with a poorly constructed bid and no fire department dialogue, has led to many items of lesser quality, vendors being approved when they otherwise would have not. One of the largest award recipients has items listed with no verifiable price, either online or in print, which is a requirement of the bid specifications. The city is not following its own rules, and I ask why. While Dallas is chasing pennies on a bid such as this, there are countless tax dollars being lost every single day. Among the 58 fire stations, there are literally tens of thousands of dollars in waste each and every month due to expired medications and supplies, simply because firefighters have no way to track them. The real answer here for the fire department, for the city of Dallas, and most importantly for the citizens, lies not with a terribly prepared, hastily approved contract for medical supplies, but rather a comprehensive inventory management system and solution that would provide quality supplies to the firefighters and allow them to manage and track their usage. This would place Dallas in a role of truly being the best stewards of taxpayer dollars. Boundary Medical respectfully requests line 26 be removed from today's consent agenda and this bid be discarded, lest the city reward poor and potentially deceptive bidding practices by vendors, leave the city with a horrible contract, and put items of lesser quality in hands of those who care for citizens of Dallas and its passerby.
Thank you.
We'll now move to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda was recently...
Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Could we have procurement come and address some of what this gentleman was talking about?
Good afternoon. Mike Frost, Director of Office of Procurement Services. The solicitation, he's correct, had 31 groups with different types of products that are used for the city. We had sample products that were listed for each group so we could determine pricing. We had catalogs that were required to be reviewed, which they were by the city. And we had alternate products that were approved as part of this process before we move forward by the fire department. So we had, during the process, we had a pre-proposal meeting. We had discussions from the vending community. All questions that came in during the process were submitted to the fire department for review. And we had 81 questions that went back out to the vending community prior to moving forward.
Were there items that didn't have prices? Were there...
We have verified pricing on all items before we move forward. Yes, ma'am.
And so all of the alternate items were approved by the fire department?
Yes, ma'am.
Does the fire department, to your knowledge, have a system to check on whether medications are about to expire?
I'll let Chief Artis speak to that.
Good evening. We're currently working on a plan to address that. We have had that issue in the past, and the plan we're working on addresses that issue, and we're currently working with everybody in the department to make sure that is functional for us.
Do you have, like, a due date for when you might put that system into place to make sure that we're not just having medicines expire and then, because it seems like that would be a real cost savings?
It is. It is. What we're currently doing is we're trying to set up a test station to test out what we're currently doing, to make sure that it works first before buying a lot of stuff and then figuring out that we need to go in another direction. All right, we're anticipating the pop to have this plan up and running before the end of the year, hopefully within the next 6 months. We're hoping to take care of this very soon.
Okay, we'll kind of look for it within the next 6 months.
That'll be the test. That's going to be the test, not the actual program running.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's still progress. Thank
yes,
you
ma'am.
For your response. And I just wanted to say, Mr. Barr, that I thought you were very articulate, and I thought your letters were very articulate. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gates?
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question before you step off, Chief. I saw the letters in the backup material and this question, so I looked at Ms. Rage to be assured that confidence in this procurement process. But the point made, and I think Ms. Grayson also asked about it, so you're looking at having a better check and balance on
yes.
medical or supplies, medications. And so do we keep an inventory, though, now? Do we have an inventory?
We currently do keep an inventory. But the way that our inventory is currently kept, we know where things are, but we sometimes lack the information to know exactly when it's going to expire. And so we're working to shore up that piece to make sure that it's better.
Okay. So we don't have a system that triggers, you know, these supplies are going to expire at a certain
No.
date.
And that's currently what we're working on.
Okay. So purchasing this equipment now, is that premature or going to impact the way
No.
we're going to keep track going forward?
That's currently what we're working on with the system, is to make sure that the system is able to handle large volume like we as Dallas Fire Works Rescue and the many EMS runs that we have. What we're looking at is a comprehensive plan that addresses the whole system, not just one thing that addresses only the medications. We want a system that allows us to keep track of everything as well as the dates.
Right. I'm assuming there's probably some equipment that, like sterile equipment, that might have an expiration date too, if it has been open in a certain amount of time. So right now, is that just the responsibility of the firefighters to kind of look at the supplies and make sure that they don't use anything that's
been those expired? As well as our supervisors. We ask them to kind of keep abreast of the dates of all the different medications, supplies that we have on hand for our stations. And sometimes that doesn't happen, and so we're working on a better system to allow us to
Do you keep track of how much you actually have to dispose of because of expiration dates at this point?
We haven't in the past. That's something we're looking at, and we want to make sure we do from here in the future.
Okay. So this new system would actually do that, so you wouldn't be purchasing too much equipment.
What we're trying to do is to make sure that we know, because we use so much as a high-volume EMS system, what happens is sometimes some stations have things that go out of date that we can move to other stations that will use it, and that's what we're trying to make a system that allows us to be able to do that.
To move things around to higher. Yes. And so in this contract, are we purchasing everything, or is it we're just giving us, like a lot of contracts, we're giving authority right to purchase so much equipment? Or so many medications and supplies, and then we just as needed. Is that right, Ms. Rach? Okay, thank you.
Ms. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I just received this package, and I just want to make sure that while this is controversial, I just want to make sure that you're comfortable as the new chief, you know, with the bid process itself. You felt like they passed through the level of procurement the way things ordinarily would.
Yes, so, we had meetings behind the scenes with procurement. We actually worked with them to get the specs out. And any time we saw that it was some issues, we had meetings with them to kind of discuss and make sure that we were comfortable before moving forward.
Okay. And Mr. Frost, would you come to the microphone? So I saw your head going up and down. So are you corroborating the fact that there has been lateral discussions with the fire department and you're comfortable with the bidding process?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Elizabeth, would you likewise agree with that, just for the record?
Yes, fully comfortable.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we don't have something else coming by at us. And, you know, it seems there's been a culture of lack of policies and procedures and a lot of different things, you know, through the city here recently. So I just want to make sure that we're all in a comfortable stage as we move forward to make sure that everything is passing muster from this point forward. Thank you for those responses. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
We will now move to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda was recently updated to reflect no pulled items. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of agenda items 2 through 30. There were no addendum consent agenda items.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to your items for individual consideration. Agenda item 31, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This afternoon, we have individual appointments. Nominees for individual appointment to the Board of Adjustments. Tamika DeRoe is being nominated by Councilmember Felder. And to the Landmark Commission, Katie Slade is being nominated by Councilmember Gates. Ms. Slade meets the Historic Preservation Special Qualification.
Do we have a second? We have a second. Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Addendum item 1, a resolution considering the Ethics Advisory Commission's EAC recommended sanction against Flora Hernandez, Civil Service Board Vice Chair, in connection with the EAC's finding of a violation of Section 8-6 pursuant to the EAC's jurisdiction and powers under Section 12A-25A2P of the Dallas City Code.
Thank you. The procedure of this is I'm going to ask Vice Chairman West to come up, and then Ms. Hernandez has signed up to speak as well. We'll take these speakers, and then I'll entertain a motion from Ms. Gates. Mr. West, I ask you to come give this City Council a background on what happened through this procedures and your findings. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We found that there was a violation. Once we established that we had jurisdiction to hear the matter, we did decide that there was a violation. Although we decided that we recognized that the violation was not intentional or egregious to, enough to warrant anything other than what we recommended to the council. And that is for just a letter reprimand.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, not a reprimand, just a letter, basically.
Letter notification.
Of notification.
Of notification.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Letter of notification. Yes. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. West while he's here? Yes, Mr. Griggs.
What was the violation exactly?
Open meetings violation.
And so how did it come about?
Via email. It was brought to us that there was an email circulated where a quorum was not present.
So did she send the email?
There was communication. So there was she received it, and then there was one sent.
So she received an email from who?
From the director, from her direct report.
From her direct report?
Yes, from the chairman of that committee.
Okay, so the chairman sent an email to the board?
Yes.
And then she hit reply all?
Yes.
Did anyone else reply in this thread also?
Not to my recollection.
Yes.
No, there was. I'm sorry. Forgive me. This has happened some time ago for me. So.
Oh, yes. No problem. Take your time if you need to collect your thoughts. We've got well into the evening today. So some other people replied to the email also.
Yes.
So are they right now? Are there ethics cases coming up today or next week?
Not that I know of.
Okay. So just this one individual.
Yes, sir.
And she just hit reply all rather than reply?
Yes.
Okay. That seems... I'll save that.
We'll have discussions. This is questions for clarifications.
May we have a copy of that? I think that it's in the packet, isn't it, that email? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? This is questions. Ms. Gates.
Thank you. That was some of my questions of what Mr. Griggs brought up. So it had come to my attention that it was you had dismissed some of the other accusations, and the only thing that was standing was this Opens Meeting Act violation because of reply to all. Is it, and you verified that?
Yes, ma'am.
And then I think what I was, my understanding was two other people replied all, but there wasn't a finding. Nobody had brought up a ethics violation regarding them, so that she would be the only one getting sanctioned for this.
That is correct.
And so this is what the recommendation is a letter of notification. Is that considered, it's still considered an ethics violation? On her record, would that be considered an ethics violation on her record?
I'm not sure as it concerns her record. I would have to seek counsel for that. I'm not really sure about that.
Well, could we have the lawyers? I mean that's substantial. If
let's get into the discussion with the city attorney once we get all the questions.
Okay, and so what was the vote of? Did you serve on the panel?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so there was I think I read four. It didn't say who, but there were four people on the panel, and then two voted.
I think it was.
Or was it five? Okay, there.
Yes.
It was six. Four voted six. In favor six. And two against.
Did you vote against or for?
Can I answer that?
Yes.
I voted against.
So you did not feel that there had been a violation?
Correct.
Okay. And so I didn't watch. I think maybe Ms. Grayson, I think, watched the entire session. Okay. Those are my questions.
We'll get into discussion. Yeah. Questions?
Yeah, I just have one. I was told by, I think, the city secretary that she had been cautioned about this before because apparently she had done this once before. I believe that's what the instructions that I were given. So that was what led this to an actionable, I guess, offense, is the fact that she had been told not to, and because this was apparently a second time that she had done this, sending reply to everyone. So do you have any evidence of that?
No, sir. I was not privy to that information.
Okay. All right. And could ask the question, Billy Ray?
Not yet. Not yet. We'll get into that. I just wanted any questions of Mr. West before he sits down. So Mr. Atkins, Any questions, Mr. West?
I guess, Mr. West, the vote was with 4-2, and I know this is a proper question to ask. Is there any reason why you vote your way with the evidence that were presented?
Like I stated, I didn't think the acts were intentional or egregious enough to warrant any type of punishment.
And so in other words, anybody could have done it was an accident.
Well, that's my position is that it was not intentional.
And the position is to bring it here that hopefully will not happen again, to be open, that these things can happen, but you could be brought up to enter charge if you intentionally hit the send button.
Right. We definitely want to make sure that all commissioners or council members are familiar with the open meetings request, and definitely we want to make sure no one violates it.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Hernandez is here. Hi. I'm Mr. Hernandez. I'm sorry. I knew that.
I'm not Ms. Hernandez, yeah. And I'm not on the agenda, but I'm her attorney. I'm Larry Friedman, and I'd like to take her place.
I think you didn't. She signed up. Why isn't she here?
She did. She's here.
Couldn't she just speak?
The reason I'm here is I know that she won't tell you all about herself, and I think it's important that you know that she was the ethics advisor for the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C.
She's got a good reputation. Can we just listen to Ms. Hernandez? Okay.
Mr. Mayor, under the ethics code, everyone has a right to counsel throughout the entire process.
Thank you, and that's and I agree with that. I'd like to listen to Ms. Hernandez.
A right to counsel is a right to be represented by counsel in the proceeding. I move that we let him speak.
Excuse me. Does Ms. Hernandez want to speak?
Mr. Mayor, that's irrelevant. I've made a motion. I'd like the motion ruled on.
Let me just add. Mr. Hernandez asked me to speak on her behalf.
So she does not want to speak?
Correct.
Please speak.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, council members. And I just wanted to say this. Ms. Hernandez is a wonderful person. Her main job, she's right here. Stand up for a second. Her main job is she's an extraordinary mother, and she's an extraordinary wife. When she lived in Washington, D.C., she was the ethics advisor to HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And she was the head of ethics for the Federal Reserve. She is an honest and an ethical person. She volunteered for this job on the Civil Service Committee, and she's been on that committee for 7 years. When this came up, this was out of the ordinary. She did receive an email from the chairman of the board, and she did respond because she felt like there wasn't accurate information. She clicked the right button instead of the left button. She meant to click it for going back to the chairman. It was one click away from a statutory infraction, but it was not intended. And that's what brought her here today. We would ask the council not to accept the recommendations of the Ethics Committee because we don't think it was deserved. And we don't think that for an inadvertent click on her laptop, she deserves a permanent mark on a very ethical professional career record. In addition, I think it sets a bad precedent for people who are willing to volunteer for committee efforts for the city of Dallas, that we put them in the line of fire, that if they make a mistake or they do something inadvertently, we're going to smear their record going forward. So I'd ask the council to consider that. Councilman Callahan, I did ask Ms. Hernandez whether or not she had been previously reprimanded or advised about public deliberations. She said she had not. So that's all I can convey to you. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for allowing me to speak. Mr. Kingston, thank you as well.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Thank you. We'll entertain a motion. Ms. Gates.
So do we need a motion before we can ask
yes.
any questions?
Yes.
To the
motion, and then we'll discuss.
I would make a motion that Now I've switched what I was going to put on the table the ethics recommendation. At this time, I don't want to do that, so I'm going to put that we not bring up an ethics violation against
you
this.
You deny to deny this?
To deny it, correct.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to discuss.
Motion and deny, and we have a second. Ms. Gates.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Fernandez is actually my appointee. I inherited her. She had been serving back in Ms. Margolin's time. And I have to say, I wish you had spoken, because I think you're an eloquent speaker and actually express a genuineness that I don't feel attorneys do. So I think it would have come a lot better from you, because I know I've worked with you over the years, and I can attest that you take the job seriously. I'm not sure what happened. This particular, I was very concerned when a violation my representative on this board. But when, and you asked me to let the due process occur, and then I read the recommendations, the recommendation struck me, when it was unintentional, two other people participated, that was probably not fair for you to have to. And that's my question, was just the letter, if that's, I guess it is a consequence and it would be a permanent record, that's what I wanted answered before I could decide if it was, if that was not substantial and we could let that happen, or if it was not, would be a stain on your reputation and that we should have it dismissed.
Mr. Queso?
So that's the question I have for City Attorney's Office.
The EAC has already made a determination about the violation. So what your responsibility is?
I know, but if we were to accept a letter of notification, is that considered a violation? So right now it hasn't been adopted as a council.
No, the EAC said that there was a violation. What council does is determine what the sanction is. And so that's what y'all are doing here today, is to determine what it is. If it's adopting the recommendation or no sanction or some other sanction. So that's what that's what y'all are doing.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Well, I do not think we need to adopt that sanction. I think that point has been made, and I know going forward, that will not be, I think everybody on the committees will know not to reply all. So I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I wanted to get back to what Mr. Callahan mentioned, and I think that what happened with that is that the board chair warned Ms. Fernandez not to talk to staff. That was what the warning was. And, of course, she clearly has the right to talk to staff. And staff had actually asked her to come and speak to them. And the email was to explain to the board chair, I believe, that she had the right to go talk to staff. Somehow the board chair believes that the entire board has to grant a board member permission in order for the board member to meet with staff. That's clearly not true, and our city attorney's office has told Ms. Hernandez she has the right to do that. So when I believe the board chair who initiated the email copied the entire board, and what Ms. Hernandez did was send a reply that copied the entire board. And then the complainant, Mr. Welch, copied the entire board when he responded. And yet only Ms. Hernandez is here getting a suggestion for a sanction. I believe that she should not have a sanction at all. I worry that if we are going to sanction board members for inadvertently taking an action or saying something more than they should have said, or hitting the send to reply all button, then we're going to have a hard time getting board members to serve on any board or commission if the slightest little thing they do inadvertently leads to a complaint from their colleague that leads to an ethics hearing. So I strongly feel that this council would be well advised to reject any recommendation for any sanction whatsoever.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Open Meetings Act is a very good piece of legislation that was enacted in Texas to make sure that things don't happen on city council the way that the media constantly portrays them as happening. You can read any number of editorials from the Dallas Morning News that makes it seem as though we all meet together in dark rooms and smoke-filled rooms and determine policy before we ever get to this horseshoe. And that is not what occurs on this council. I'm proud of my colleagues in that regard. I'm proud of the city staff in that regard in keeping us honest about making sure that the debate that happens at the horseshoe is the real debate. It's the actual debate, because the point is to allow people in the community to participate in the real debate, not in a kabuki debate that occurs after the real decision is made. So the Open Meetings Act operates to ensure that the public has access to the real debate by stating that all deliberations must happen in an official meeting. So deliberation has been defined extremely broadly to make sure that it catches all the kinds of communications people make among themselves. And so you can twist the Open Meetings Act to make the reply all emails that we've seen in this packet be deliberations outside of a meeting. And you can make that argument. You would lose if you brought it in a court of law, but of course, no one brings it in a court of law. They utilize the Ethics Advisory Commission, and I agree very much with Mr. West. I think his judgment was correct in this, and I thank him for his vote. And I hope the EAC doesn't feel insulted by this council's action today. I appreciate their service, and I think that you guys were very much on the right track. So it should not be taken as a rebuke of your judgment. I think that you all did what was put in front of you. That it was put in front of you is what irritates me very much. Put in front of you by someone who did the same damn thing. That's not okay. That is just not okay. And what happens here on the reply all emails, our city attorneys will tell us that the reply all email is a deliberation under the Open Meetings Act because they're trying to protect us from violating the act, and they're trying to protect the public's right to have access to the real debate. But what the Open Meetings Act was really for is to prevent that kind of deliberation that happens that makes the debate meaningless. And that is not what happened here. When you have a reply all email, you have a publicly accessible, discoverable chain of discussions that will not prevent any citizen from having input on a matter of public debate. Now, Ms. Hernandez has had to bring her legal team down here. I see two very fine lawyers out there. Larry Friedman, it doesn't come cheap, and it's because he's worth it. This is really frustrating. This isn't just we put Ms. Hernandez in an uncomfortable position. This is a situation where she's out money. It irritates me a lot. I'm quite irritated with the way this has turned out. And so that the public has access to the real debate here, let me explain what's going on. The people who filed this complaint are trying to undermine civil service protections for workers here at City Hall, and Ms. Hernandez is trying to protect them. And that's what this is really about. And if you want our workers at City Hall to have vibrant civil service protections and feel comfortable and safe in their jobs, you ought to let your council member know that you don't really appreciate this kind of bullying tactic. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. First off, I want to thank my colleague, Ms. Gates, for changing that motion. Whenever someone mentions Ms. Hernandez, you're known as a woman of integrity. You have done a great job on the Civil Service Board. As a Latino, I'm proud to have you there, a strong Latina woman. I know that you are trying to protect civil service here. And I believe that this is something that I know that the other person doesn't. And so I just want to say I'm sorry that you're here. And you knew I was going to fight for you and continue to do that. I'm sorry you had a lot of money, because it did cost you a lot of money to get those attorneys, I know. But I think this is silly. I know the person that you are. And again, I will be supporting Ms. Gates' new motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be supporting Ms. Gates's current motion. I do believe in what little the council got to hear. I did go back and review the tapes. I asked a lot of questions. I don't take ethics violations lightly. I think Ms. Grayson knows. I think one time we were in the lunchroom and a group of folks started sitting down, and I immediately looked at her and I said, is so-and-so, I was brand new. And I was like, is that person on the committee? Is that person on the committee? And she goes, yeah, they are. And I responded back. I said, I'm getting up and I'm leaving now, because I didn't want anything to happen to this council, because that's what we do. We discuss things. We talk about things. It has happened on this council with an email where somebody has replied all. And I, you know, and because of experience, I immediately contacted our former city attorney and said, hey, is this, you know, can you give this council member a warning? Just let them know so that they don't screw up, because we want the integrity of our council, regardless if it's me on my own or this or one of my colleagues, whether we agree on an issue or we don't agree on the issue. I want this body to be held to the highest standard, and I think that everybody else on this body agrees with that. Ms. Hernandez, I think you have done an excellent job so far. Your reputation is stunning across this entire city for what you have done and what you will do going forward in the future. I am sorry this is happening to you. Politics is not always pretty, and unfortunately, you're being used as a pawn in my opinion. And this is ridiculous that we're having to go through all of this because of what a few people want to do to civil service in this city. I will be wholeheartedly supporting it. Ms. Hernandez, again, my apologies that you're going through this, and you will be receiving my vote for no sanctions at all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, I just want to say I don't see, after I've listened to everybody talk on the subject, that really no sanction, no censure, no reprimand, really just simply a verbal warning about just try to avoid doing that in the future, I think is really sufficient. But there sure did seem to be a lot of energy put behind this, and I'm a little dismayed by that as well. So I haven't heard anything on the negative side, and I think Ms. Gates is a competent councilwoman that goes out and selects good people, so I just don't see any reason to take any official action here at all. And so hopefully our ethics group and our other boards and commissions will be a little bit more respectful in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins hasn't spoken.
Thank you, Ms. Gates. I think that you really, you know, sincerely look at the issue at hand, and you make the right decision. Ms. Hernandez, you know, I understand how you feel. When you got a mark, a potential mark on your back, it's hard to erase that. And especially, I do understand paying attorneys. I have my full of paying attorneys, you know, for things. But I hope this council united to vote the right way, and I'm calling for the record vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say thank you, Jennifer, for your motion, and I just want to not have this item end before I have a chance to say to Ms. Hernandez how much I admire your service. You have given us tremendously wonderful service, and we thank you for it.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins asked for a record vote, so we're voting on the item to deny item one.
12 have voted. 13 have voted. All have voted. With all members present voting in favor, the denial passes. Let me note for the record, Councilmember Felder and Councilmember Kleinman was absent when vote taken. We'll now move to addendum item two.
Thank you.
Addendum item 2, authorized the First Amendment to the Forgivable Loan Agreement with Shared Housing Center, Inc., Shared Housing, for the acquisition of the property at 4611 Eastside Avenue for the development of a transitional housing project for homeless single parents to 1. Extend the completion date from November 12, 2012 to November 30, 2020, 2. Increase the amount of units required from 20 units to 24 units, 3. Require that the facility be built to LEED, L-E-E-D, gold green standards. 4. Add a requirement that shared housing provide social services to its residents, and 5, amend the contract to include performance thresholds and requirements.
Yeah, that's all right, Mr. Agnes, but that's okay. He was just going to do the same thing. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes this session.
We'll see you back at 6 o'clock. I think we've got a quorum. Good evening. Let's see. I thought Mr. Clayton was around. He is? We'll wait for him. All right, we'll go ahead. Welcome, everybody. I'll call the City Council agenda meeting for January 9th, 2019, back to order. I welcome everybody this morning for the first afternoon morning event. You've got the first evening afternoon event. We decided to do that so more people could come and be part of us, welcome everybody for being here. With that, we will take our consent items up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Arnold would like to be recognized on agenda item 41.
Ms. Arnold.
Excuse me. I move to defer the zoning change until February the 13th, 2019. Second.
Which item?
41.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion, Ms. Arnold?
No, we want to give the applicant sufficient time to gather more information, and we'll be ready by the 13th.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to your zoning consent agenda. Your zoning consent agenda consists of agenda items 32 through 35. I'll read those items into the record. Agenda item 32 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development sub-district for non-residential uses on property on the west line of Cedar Springs Road, the northeast line of Bookout Street, and the southwest line of Maple Avenue. Agenda item 33 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to planned development district number 440 on the southeast line of East Grand Avenue, southwest of La Vista Drive. Agenda item 34 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an R-7.5A single-family district on property on the north line of Bearden Lane, east of South Buckner Boulevard. Agenda item 35 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 2168 for an animal shelter or clinic with outside run on property along the north line of West Commerce Street, west of Chappelle Street. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to any of the zoning items that were just read into the record? You may come forward. Please state the item you will be speaking on. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
It's item 32, the Maple Cedar Springs item.
Thank you. And also, please state your name and address for the record.
Mm-hmm. My name is T.S. Morgan, and I live at 2915 Bookout in Dallas. This proposed development.
If you can just bring your mic down.
Oh, I'm
just
sorry.
That's
okay,
all right. Thank you.
Can you hear? Okay.
Much better.
This proposed development is a 27-story office building. I've heard different modifications to the plan, but it's my understanding that there will be underground parking, and the entrance and exit to that parking will be on Bookout Street. Bookout Street is a residential street. It's not a commercial street. It's only about 4 or 5 blocks long. My neighbors park on Bookout Street. Many of them have a car that doesn't fit in their garage, then they park on the street. I had heard at one point that they wanted to eliminate the parking on Bookout Street in order to give more room for the commercial traffic that this development would bring to the area. I don't know whether that's been scrapped, but my guess is that even if it's initially scrapped, that it won't take long for them to realize that they don't have enough room on Bookout to manage thousands of cars every day that will be traveling for a 27-story office building. Now, it should be pointed out that this project borders on Cedar Springs and Maple, which are two commercial streets. And my thinking on this is if two commercial streets, Cedar Springs and Maple, are not adequate to provide for the traffic for this large development, then why would we turn the traffic over to a residential street that was never designed to carry this much traffic? It seems like if the project is too big for Cedar Springs and Maple, then maybe the project is just too big for the neighborhood. Now, my home is 20 feet from Bookout Street. My front door is 20 feet from Bookout Street. And what they're proposing is to send 1,500 cars a day in the morning, 1,500 cars at night, right in front of my front door. They try and minimize and say a talking point of, oh, well, people will Uber and rideshare. Well, it's not my experience that people rideshare Uber to work every day. So my estimate is that there'll be 2,000 to 3,000 cars that will travel right in front of my home, 20 feet from my door. And I oppose this. I think that it's bad for the neighborhood. And I hope that you would consider, if that happened to you, if someone made a proposal like that within 20 feet of your door, what you would do. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Are there any other individuals in the audience that would like to speak in favor to any of the zoning items that were just read in the record? Sir, you may come forward.
If anybody wants to speak against or in favor, come on down so I can get a sense of that. Three. Okay.
Please state the agenda item number and your name and address for the record.
Sir? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
My name is Duncan Fulton. I'm representing Granite Properties, and I'm at 2808 Fairmount. I'm the architect of the project. Just a couple of things. The project actually has two entrances to the garage. One entrance is on Bookout. There are two lanes that serve Bookout, but the primary entrance is on Cedar Springs, and there are three entrances there, so there are three lanes that serve that. So the we do actually have the primary entrance on Maple. On Cedar Springs. And I would call to your attention that the in the staff report, traffic, we submitted a traffic study, and the engineering division has reviewed the request and determined that the traffic would not have a negative impact. There's been some confusion about what the proposal for the parking is on Bookout. Our position has been we're agnostic on the parking. There's parking on one side of Bookout on two blocks adjacent to us, and we are supportive of that remaining. There are four spaces that the traffic study suggested immediately adjacent to Cedar Springs. Traffic study suggested that those be considered for elimination, and we were supportive of that recommendation but are not an advocate of it. Our official position is we want to follow the will of the community regarding that parking on Bookout, and I'd also point out that it's in the right-of-way and it's not on our property to begin with. So I'll be glad to answer any other questions that y'all might have.
Next speaker.
Hi, I'm John Gatman. I'm actually neighbors with the woman who spoke earlier against. I live at 2907 Bookout Street. I've lived in Dallas now for 11 years, moved here from New York and Boston before that. What appealed to me, and I've actually lived in this area the entire time on Bookout Street, first at the Trianon as a renter, now at my house as a homeowner. What kept me in Dallas. I now am a business owner. I employ 9 people actually in the Rolex building, so also in Uptown. More than half my employees actually walk to work. What keeps me in Dallas is projects like the Granite Project that have mixed office along with restaurants, also the beautification projects that we've had in Uptown. This is, I think, projects like this have been very helpful for the area in terms of attracting people like me who set up jobs that all of my employees make substantial amounts of money that bring in high income jobs. I think this is a great project. I live right in the affected area. Thumbs up.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
My name is Dawn Mickey. I live at 2300 Wolf Street in the residences of Stoneleigh. My family owns and lives in 3 units in the building, which are within 500 feet of the Cedar Maple zoning application, and we all strongly support the Granite zoning request and hope you will approve it. One of our units is located on the 20th floor. We know that what the developer could build by right is almost as tall as our building, so our views will change regardless. We believe the Granite building will enhance the skyline and make our views even more interesting. Living an urban lifestyle is one of the many things that attracted us to this part of Dallas. The Granite Project will bring new restaurants within walking distance of our home and a fabulous public green space. Granite is offering many benefits to the neighborhood. They are building all of their parking underground, which is very expensive, but also much more attractive for the neighborhood. They're also creating a pocket park. This is an amenity that is hard to create in areas where land costs are so high, so we are especially appreciative of this aspect of the project. This new building will be an impressive addition to our skyline, and the project itself enhances our neighborhood. Please vote yes for this zoning cause.
Next speaker. This concludes the speakers on this item, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve. Got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll take up
item 37 in a later time.
That's correct. And agenda item 36 was deleted on the agenda. Therefore, we will move to agenda item 38. Item 38 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development District Number 734 for a public school other than an open enrollment charter school on property on the southeast corner of Nuestra Drive and Wozencraft Drive.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 210 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 9 replies in favor and 27 in opposition.
We do have 2 individuals who have signed up to speak on the item. After they speak, it will be open to the audience for further comments. Those 2 speakers are Teddy Chu. You may come forward, Mr. Chu. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Teddy Chu. I live in 5955 Bonnet Drive. I'm also the president of our HOA in the Present Meadows location, which represent 93 homeowners in the properties. Our properties is east of Jamestown Park, which is right next to the school in question. There are two things I want to bring up. First, regarding the communication and notification, it turned out that we only find out about this project very late because only two homeowners in our property area were notified. I did speak with Ms. Gates' office and understand that's the statutory requirement, and I fully understand, but I would like to the council to consider maybe enhancing for a school project this big to have a more notification to the neighborhood, especially our HOA, which has 93 houses. But the second, which is more important point I want to bring up is I have reviewed the traffic management plan. I also spoke to the engineer involved, Mr. David Navarez. He also gave me the school traffic assessment plan. What I didn't see is the potential increase of traffic through our neighborhood. If you look at the map, we are right east of the property. We did see occasionally some traffic cut through Bonnet Drive through to and from Preston Road, which may increase during the peak hours, pick up and drop off. If you look at the numbers, there are a total of more than 300 K to fifth grade students added. Most of them probably will be dropped off or picked up by parents individually in their car. So we fully expect that there will be traffic increase in that area. And when that school traffic is congested, people will be tempted to take our neighborhood as a shortcut going in and out of Preston Road. So I would like the council to consider delaying the project to have a more thorough study to see whether there's potential impact to our neighborhood and see if there's any mitigation steps that can be taken to minimize the impact to our neighborhood. Thank you very much.
Margaret Manser.
Good evening. I'm Margaret Manser. I reside at 12503 Renoir Lane in Dallas. That is the Preston Meadow community that Teddy just referred to. We have 93 homes, as he said, 93 garden homes. I've lived there 2.5 years. Previous to that, I lived in the subdivision just to the south, which is Melshire Estates, 3 blocks away. I've lived there for more than 30 years. I know both these neighborhoods very well. I'm also a realtor and I work in the area. I consider myself to be a fairly well-informed citizen. I take the Dallas paper and I even listen to city council meetings on WRR. Thus, it came as a shock and a surprise to me to learn of the proposed expansion of the Walker Middle School in my neighborhood, which was recommended for approval by this council, by the CPC Commission, at its November 15th meeting, that subject to some tweaking of traffic patterns. It was particularly surprising to my neighbors in Preston Meadow because of our 93 homeowners. There were only 14 who were notified of that November 15th meeting. What are the rest of us? Chopped liver? On the CPC map printed on the 15th, it shows a notification of 214 homeowners within the 500-foot radius. I suggest that the two neighborhoods with the most residents, Melshire Estates and Preston Meadow, should all have been notified of a project of this magnitude. This is a question of notification. It's a question of transparency. And we're a little bit concerned. We don't feel that we were given good notification. And one of the things I'd like to speak to is to postpone voting on this until the 650 property owners can be notified to get adequate, accurate feedback on the issue. One of the few people who were notified of tonight's meeting, Mark Edmondson, contacted Councilperson Gates' office requesting postponement of this discussion, and she said it was pretty much off the table. So I'm just here to repeat that request and hope we get some help. I'm getting the blinking light. My neighbors and I are incredulous that a project of this magnitude was not really brought to full attention to the neighborhood. We'd like to be invited to discuss a little more thoroughly and just get a fair hearing. So thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC's recommendation for this item? Any speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
No.
No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Ms. Gates.
Thank you. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Yes.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for coming down. My understanding is it's the traffic concerns that brought you to the night, and those were vetted. We actually had a neighborhood meeting, and I apologize that you were not notified of that in October. We held it at the Walnut Hill Recreation Center, the Melshire neighborhood. We had close to 100 people in attendance. We didn't have your contact information or aware that you had your own neighborhood association outside of the Melshire. We discussed traffic issues through the entire neighborhood. We made the traffic engineers reviewed it, and this actual traffic mitigation plan, all the queuing will occur on campus. And there should be no natural traffic flow through the neighborhood. As you're aware, this is a large campus, and then you have a large park between the school and your homes. The reason why your neighborhood, there was 214 homes that were notified. We did receive back some objection, and most of the objection was concerns related to traffic. I think it was 214 were mailed, and again, that's because of proximity. So the two homes in your neighborhood were the only ones within 500 feet. We did receive some, and I reached out. All zoning cases are placed on my website at the city page, as well as we push that information out, and all of our information, if we have your emails. So we must not have had your contact information. I think I went through all the opposition last night. We got all the different cards. And other than traffic, there was just consideration or concern about the school itself expanding. I'd like to point out this school is expanding. It's going up through eighth grade. There would be no students themselves driving, which I know is a big concern when we have high school expansion. DISD has identified a reason the zoning or the school area that meets these boundaries. More kids have moved in, and Frank is gotten too full, and they determined that they had to enlarge one of the schools. Because of the size of this campus, this is where the location that they chose. There was some discussion at our public meeting in October about why did DISD have to expand this school. That's a DISD issue. We as a council look at the land use. Is the facilities can be accommodated on the property, and can the traffic move in and out? Is it going to be safe for the students? We have vetted that. The CPC Council, our CPC Commission, thoroughly investigated all those points as well. I could have traffic, if they want to, or somebody from development, speak to a little bit about the queuing of how this is going to occur and why we do not think it will overflow into your neighborhood. Can someone, Neva?
So there's two different queuings on the TMP. There's one for the elementary school and one for the middle school. And
the middle school is the addition, just so everybody's aware.
Right. Yeah. And so they both come off Nuestra.
I reversed it. Yes. Yes. The middle school is existing, and they're adding elementary because of the Anne Frank.
Right. So they're both going to come off New Estra, and there's enough lane width length on the school to handle all of the queuing. There's separate busing that will be separate from the drop-off and pickup of the parents. Our engineer has offered to keep in touch with Mr. Chu. If there's issues, then we'll address it and come out and see about changing.
So when they exit the school, they exit in New Estra, right, which is on the west side of your neighborhood.
Right.
So they're not pushing it towards the east, which would be back into the neighborhood at all. So so I respect that you would like the delay, but I don't, you know, speaking with DISD, they need to move forward on their plans. I don't know what we would achieve in another delay because we vetted out all the concerns. I think we've come up with the best traffic plan possible for the neighborhood. And I think it's important us as a council, we look at these land uses, and we're very supportive of DISD and very doing the work that they're charged to do and making sure that all kids in Dallas have a good education. I've worked very closely. I know I called Dr. Flores. He was not able to be here tonight. He's taking a child back to college. But we work side by side with the trustees. We as a city are impacted. We know it impacts our workforce and why people want to live here, and we want to make these schools successful. And this expansion is part of the DISD's plans to be a successful school district. So I ask for your support tonight, but I thank you. We'll continue to work with your neighborhood. We have your contact information. We'll make sure that they're compliant. That's something we do. We've done that with other schools, that they're compliant with their traffic management plan, and the schools are a good neighbor. So thank you.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Three opposed. Okay. Thank you.
We'll now move back to agenda item 37. Item 37 is a public hearing regarding an application for a planned development subdistrict for MF-2 multiple family uses on property on the west line of Carlisle Street between North Hall Street and Bowen Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 948 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 157 replies in favor and 698 in opposition. Due to denial by the CPC and the opposition of owners of more than 20% of the land within 200 feet of the area of request, this will require a three-quarter vote to approve.
CPC recommends denial without prejudice. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the denial? Please come forward.
I mean, this is folks that are opposing the denial. Okay. Thank you. All right. We got it.
Are there any speakers
in opposition? Is it just these folks? Is it just these two that are speaking, or is anybody else? We've got one more.
Yes.
You got two speaking in opposing the denial.
Correct, Mr. Mayor.
Show of hands, who's going to speak on that? One more, two more, two more. Thank you. Okay. Good to see you, Ms. Hunt.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. It's good to be here. Good evening, members of the council. I'm Angela Hunt. I represent Lincoln Property Company. I'm with Munch Hart, 500 North Ackard Street. Lincoln is proposing a multifamily development that will require rezoning in the heart of Uptown. The site is located on the Katy Trail. You can see it there. It's on Carlisle Street. It's between Hall and Bowen. And if you look at the image, you can see that it's surrounded by various types of development. We have a five-story development just to the north of the site, three stories directly opposite on Carlisle Street. You'll see the 17-story Taylor project. It's catty corner from the site, and then just to the south of the site, you'll see the Monaco. It's six stories. This project, if you'll go to the next slide, is proposing 307 units. It would be two buildings separated into two buildings along the block. If you'll turn that towards me just a little bit and go back. Thank you. It's five and six stories, 70 feet in height. There are affordable units, which are part of the project.
We'd have walk-up units on Carlisle and Hall Street. Walk-up units are not required as part of the current zoning. All the parking would be either underground or wrapped by units. There would be two new public entries that Lincoln has committed to constructing to the Katy Trail. There would be a public promenade connecting Carlisle Street to the Katy Trail for pedestrians. All the power lines that are on Carlisle and Bowen Street would be buried. This would allow the introduction of parkway trees along Carlisle Street and Bowen Street, which we don't have today. This project, as you'll see in a minute, fits the density and the character of the neighborhood, and it would be a $110 million investment compared to the $25 million investment there today. It is currently 1960s apartments that are in deteriorating condition. This gives you an idea of what the project is proposed. You can see on the right-hand side, those two images are the back of the project. Some of the feedback, and we'll get into that in a minute, was that this project did not engage with the Katy Trail. You can see this project now, after revisions from the architects in Lincoln, engages fully with the Katy Trail. It has walk-up units all along the rear of the project. I don't think this is our time. Is that correct, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, that's your time.
Do we not have 15 minutes per side?
No. I just, I don't know who's on this. I keep on talking. We'll try to figure it out.
So this is the project that was originally proposed. This was originally approved by the Oak Lawn Committee in February of this year. It is a single building that runs along the entirety of the block with a fire lane along the entire back of the project. This was entirely revised based on the community input we got over the course of the last 3 years. Lincoln has had considerable input from the community, as you can see by this list. As a result of the community input, the project has gone from 90 feet to 70 feet, 309 units to 307 units. There's an urban forum setback from Carlisle, which means that it is tiered so that you have a setback on the first floor and then a further setback above that. The fire lane on the back of the project has been fully eliminated and wrapped with units. The garage that you saw on the back of the building originally has been completely wrapped with units. You do not any longer see the garage on any part of the building, on any side, except when you're actually entering it. The loading docks were moved internally to the building rather than having them on the fire lane out in the open on the Katy Trail. They're now internal to the building and gated, so you won't see those either. At the request of neighbors, bike parking was added, wider sidewalks were added. The power lines were buried. Pedestrian entry points were added. We heard that there were three major issues with the project back in July, a representative from opponents to the project. Lincoln took 2 months and completely redesigned this project in response to the issues that we heard. And, Mr. Mayor, if I could have three more minutes to complete this.
Well, folks that will be speaking in favor of the item, the recommendation to deny, a show of hands in favor. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, okay? And we've got three other folks, so take 2 more minutes, okay? And then we'll give these other guys 5 minutes, okay? If you can do that. Is that all right?
I might take a couple of minutes of your time. They're fine with speaking 1 minute each.
Okay, all right, then that's good. Right. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So here are the major issues that we heard. One, that this building was monolithic. It spanned the entirety of the block and needed it to be broken up. Two, that there was a fire lane against the Katy Trail instead of directly engaging with the trail with green space and units. Three, that there was an above-ground parking garage that faced the trail. Each and every one of those issues has been totally addressed. Second, lack of pedestrian access from the street and the building to the Katy Trail. In the PD, you'll see language requiring pedestrian access from each part of the buildings. And lastly, the loss of neighborhood character, views, and the environment. As we'll see on one of the next slides, this fits within the character of the neighborhood and the current built environment. This is a document that was distributed by opponents to the project talking about what they wanted to see. And if you'll look on the right-hand side, you'll see a yellow block around a drawing. This was one of the drawings that was shown as an example of what should go on the site instead of what Lincoln had originally proposed. And if you'll look here, what you'll see is an enlargement of that design. If you'll look in the lower part, that is Lincoln's new design. It is nearly identical, but it's actually better. In Lincoln's design,
Not only are there two entry points to the Katy Trail, which was requested in the document that the opponents distributed in August, in addition to that, there are units that line the Katy Trail. Those weren't in the original design that's shown in the upper left-hand corner. The promenade that's created has wide sidewalks to allow pedestrian access, public access to the Katy Trail. This is the environment that this project is proposed to be built in. I want to point out two things. One is the number of stories for these different projects that are right around here, and also the density. A point has been made that this project is too dense. This project balances the density of the lower intensity units, like the three-story typical multifamily, with some of the higher intensity projects that are right around this project. If you'll look, you'll see post-Katy Trail, it's 5 and 6 stories today. It has 99 units an acre. If you look at the Renaissance, it's got 3 towers. It's right down the street on Hall Street, 22 stories and 17 stories, and it's 173 units an acre. Just south of the site's the Monaco, 147 units an acre, and then the Taylor has 182 units an acre. Lincoln's proposing 81 units per acre. Traffic impact is minimal. That was confirmed by 2 separate traffic engineering firms, as well as the city's traffic engineer. It's been challenging to work through some of the misinformation that's been on the street on this project. We've heard that the building is 10 stories tall and it's 110 feet tall, neither of which is true. It's 6 stories and 70 feet tall. That the parking garage is above ground. The parking garage is entirely wrapped and also below grade. We've heard that Lincoln is seeking tens of millions of dollars in city subsidies. Lincoln is seeking $0 in city subsidies for this economic project. Lastly, there was a flyer distributed to residents that was clearly intended to appear to be a city flyer, and it contains misinformation. So let's talk about the facts. Here's the zoning request: increasing the height from 36 feet to 70 feet, from 3 stories to 6, lot coverage from 60% to 70%, increasing the maximum units to 307, burying the power lines, wrapping the parking garage, and most importantly, Lincoln had committed to 5% affordable. That would be 15 units. Lincoln is prepared to support 15% affordable housing units for 15 years. Let's put that in numbers. That's 46 units. 46 units. Now, when we compare that to what's there today with 115 units, it replaces 40% of the units that are there today with affordable units. It's a remarkable concession that they've come to the table with. So we're asking today, Mr. Mayor, that Lincoln be approved for the applicant's request with the addition of 15% affordable for 15 years, and we'll sit down for questions. We'd like to reserve any time we might have for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
I'll take Ms. Hunter's word and give you a minute.
1 minute. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Leland Burke. I live at 5311 Park Lane in Dallas, and I represent the ownership of a number of properties in PD 193. I'm here today to speak in favor of the zoning request in my individual capacity. I believe the zoning request should be approved for the following reasons. The proposed height of 5 and 6 stories clearly fits the context of the neighborhood. The traffic is not significantly impacted, as demonstrated by the DeSejo study and is confirmed by the peer review study. The project fully integrates with the Katy Trail and provides 2 new public entrances at the developer's sole cost. The developer is providing underground power lines on Carlisle, wider sidewalks, and walk-up units, which all make the project more walkable than is required by a by-right project. This is a dense area, and a modest increase in density is appropriate. Lastly, I applaud Lincoln for adding the needed affordable housing component to this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. My name is Francisco Medrano. I reside at 3203 Carlisle Street. No relation to Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, full disclosure. Just want to voice my in favor of this project. I am the homeowner association president, though I speak on my behalf only. From my vantage point at the corner of where I live at Carlisle and Bowen, I look up to see the Taylor, which is within a rock's throw of my residence. And there were 17 stories, and they looked down upon, not us figuratively, but literally. And to the vine next door across the street, the project that the Katy Trail project is from Lincoln is a very good project. It's gone through many iterations and given the support gone through the many iterations with the input from the community, and they've each one of their plans has been an improvement, and they've worked tirelessly to address the concerns of the community. And for those reasons, I think that it's
Thank
an
you.
Improvement.
Thank you. You. We'll take folks that are for the recommendation of denial. Excuse me.
May we hear from Jeff for just 1 minute, please, Mr. Mayor? I thought he was going to speak as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought there were only two that raised their hand.
Or John, either way.
Thank you, Mr. Please. Mayor. I'm John Beasley, and I reside at 3215 Carlisle Street, number 118, in Uptown Dallas, and have been there for the past 12 years. As a member of the board of directors of the Turtle Creek Terrace Homeowners Association, I represent a supermajority of property owners who support the Lincoln Katy Trail project. For nearly 3 years, my fellow owners at Turtle Creek Terrace have closely followed Lincoln's plans to redevelop the place we call home. The project has gone through many changes, and these changes represent neighbors along the Katy Trail, their needs, their wants, and there's an ever-changing, vibrant uptown. Indeed, the ownership has met with Lincoln multiple times to understand how these changes will enhance the neighborhood with a minimum of impact to our neighbors. We are pleased that Lincoln has included an affordable housing initiative in their plan, and I will definitely invest and relocate in that same neighborhood. Today, a supermajority of the homeowners at Turtle Creek Terrace asked the City Council to approve Lincoln Katy Trail as presented tonight. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, if I think there were nine hands of those, please come on down. We'll take, I'll ask security to take this, whatever it's called, away. Ma'am? Yeah, wall. We'll do a couple of minutes apiece, okay? 2 minutes apiece. Go ahead.
Good evening, members of the Dallas City Council. My name is David Hairston. I have been a resident of 3215 Carlisle Street, the property in question, for over 11 years. The question is, why are we here? The Dallas Development Code requires 100% of the people that live on a property agree to an application for rezoning. Now, our president of the HOA made the decision to allow Lincoln to put forth this application. This is a stable and diverse neighborhood. Everybody works and pays taxes. Nobody's getting any subsidies. We're going backwards when we're talking about affordable housing. Everybody that lives there, again, as I mentioned, works hard. If this were to go through, there will be a simultaneous closing with the termination of the condominium. We have to be out by February. And at that point, Lincoln Properties can enter your property without notice. And I've spent $6,000 in attorney fees. And I understand from my attorneys that I can be removed. My family can be removed by the sheriff's department, and that's at gunpoint. So after that, you got forced arbitration. If you want to fight this thing, the chances of winning will put us in bankruptcy. This is very serious to the people that own and have a homestead at Turtle Creek Terrace Condominiums.
Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Sue Kreider on behalf of the Oaklawn Committee.
At the most, after they revised their plan, Lincoln did come back to the Oak Lawn Committee, and at that time the Oak Lawn Committee voted to not support their plan. They take very seriously neighborhood input and also the fact that this is the land use currently is MF2, and they cannot support the increase in the density. There's plenty of other places for them to build where they won't have to have a change in the zoning. So we ask your support of the Oak Lawn Committee as well as the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Why didn't somebody else speak while you get that ready?
Hi, my name is Steve Metzger. I live at the Mayfair 3401 Lee Parkway. Thank you for letting me spend some time here. I think we've heard a lot of discussion about redesign. My issue is that it violates the zoning and the Oak Lawn plan from the very beginning, so no amount of redesign is going to fix it. I think if it were done within MF2, we would all support it. Even slight changes, but in our opinion, there's just no reason to change the zoning to accommodate this project. If it doesn't fit their profitability metrics, we're all business people, we get that, that's okay, they should find another site. So I think in order to stay within the confines and the feel of the neighborhood, which is a phenomenal area, they should stay within MF2. And again, they get a whole lot more support. So I would ask that we do not allow this project to go forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Next. Whoever's next there.
Good evening. I'm Al Chapman. I live at 3235 Cole Avenue, number 45. I'm the president of the Woodshire Court Homeowners Association. Been there 15 years now, and I got to say it's a great neighborhood. It's been a great neighborhood, even without Lincoln somehow. I'll just give you the short version of it because I only got a little bit of time. But the fact is, over two-thirds of the responses received were in opposition to this. And if anything, that understates the case. There are a number of people who, because of professional consideration or professional courtesy, would not respond with their opposition. But it's gotten back to us that, hey, I hope this thing goes down, but I can't go on the record opposing it because it's my job. So the short version is this. Staff has recommended denial. CPC has recommended denial. And the reason they recommended denial was because this project is fundamentally incompatible with adjacent low-rise multifamily land uses in density, scale, height, and the character of the neighborhood. This will create much higher density by significantly increasing the number of apartment units that can be built compared to what's in the current zoning. This higher density would definitely create more traffic on already crowded streets, and you know, it would really hurt the street parking. Building heights would be out of scale. You know, they talk about stories, but we all know code is written to feet of height, not to stories, because you can always jiggle the numbers on stories. So in summary, the current MF2 zoning is the most appropriate zoning for the neighborhood. Our low-rise neighborhood works well as it is. That's why I and everyone up here has made our homes here. It's not just an investment, it's a home, and there's a big difference there. On behalf of the coalition and myself, I respectfully ask you to deny this, and I'd even ask for it with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Ma'am.
I'll make this quick. Are we up there yet?
Isn't it working?
Go. There we are.
There it is. Go ahead.
My name is Amanda Popkin. I live at 2519 Catherine Street. The bottom line for this project is that it's not appropriate for this site, as you've heard. Our city is striving to create rich, diverse, thriving neighborhoods, and we have come together to plan our neighborhoods with Forward Dallas, the Oak Lawn Plan, and so many others. And if these are to be our guiding documents, they must have some staying power to be worth anything. As stated in previous upzoning case for a parcel in this MF2 neighborhood, that there's a reason we have zoning so that residents can have some certainty as to what the future of the community will look like. Over the past 2.5 years, this project has been extremely expensive in terms of our most valuable resource, our citizens' time and attention, volunteering to be engaged in important matters like this, zoning cases that affect everyday experiences in their neighborhood. As realtors know, people buy a neighborhood. They don't buy a home. Case in point, two-thirds of PD 193 is a landscape plan. It's the reason Oak Lawn is such a great place. It's the space between the buildings that matters the most. We need diversity in our neighborhoods, and this is only one of two protected MF2 areas in Uptown, the other being in the St. Thomas area. In these 26 acres here, there are 45 individual two- and three-story buildings directly adjacent to this site in a variety of ages and architectural styles. In 2007, a similar Gables property rezoning proposal just across Hall Street was denied with prejudice by council, and because of this, residents have made sizable investments based on the certainty of the zoning being upheld. The parcels outlined in green here are all underdeveloped sites with the existing density rights to build what Lincoln has proposed. They could easily build on any of these. There is no need to begin this domino effect of upzoning this protected MF2 neighborhood. This is a stable, primarily owner-occupied neighborhood with some of the last remaining naturally occurring affordable workforce housing in one of Dallas's most expensive neighborhoods. Although this project promises to retain 46 affordable units, as we just heard, for only 15 years, we will have a net loss of 69 affordable units here. There have been no rescinded letters of opposition. I'll speed through this as quickly as I can.
No, we're done. Thanks. I've tried to give everybody a couple minutes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Bob Griffo. I reside at 3834 Bowser Avenue. I've lived in the Oaklawn area since 1991. Previously, I lived in Washington, D.C. One of the things in Washington, D.C. where I lived is it became a canyon. The development density was such that we had high buildings on both sides of the streets, and it really was like living downtown instead of a residential neighborhood. I'm speaking now. I don't live adjacent to this. I previously lived, before I bought my current townhome, I previously lived near the current project that's being discussed. And one of the things that I've noticed is since 1991, when I moved here, there was very little activity in terms of real estate development in the Oaklawn area for a variety of reasons. And primarily the development that did occur in the early years was all townhome developments, and people were in the MF2, and people were building townhouses because the land was more affordable in the MF2 areas. And now that it's a more popular area, now people are trying to force changes, and we need to respect the zoning for the area in Oaklawn, and there are plenty of MF3 properties that would permit projects of this size in Oaklawn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is James Genova. I live at 3401 Lee Parkway. And I don't want to repeat much of what you've already heard about respect for current zoning. I want to mention how many of my fellow residents have been involved and engaged with emails to the CPC, emails to City Council. You've looked for engagement from the neighborhood. You've gotten engagement from the neighborhood, clear and unambiguous against changing rezoning. We bought here for MF2. Keep it MF2. If you want MF3, walk across Turtle Creek and develop right there. So thank you for your time. And please respect the time of all the residents who came forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good evening. I'm Dan Halliburton. I live at 3030 McKinney Avenue. It's the Latour Condominium Complex, and I'm on the board of directors. Thank you for an opportunity to just underscore a few things that you've been hearing here tonight. Latour was one of the first significant residential developments in Uptown, and its owners have collectively made roughly a $70 million investment. And we did that counting on the neighborhood, the character of the neighborhood that exists today. And although the residents of Latour generally support context-sensitive development, we just don't feel that this complex meets the criteria that we need to see and what we're depending on for the very unique nature of Oaklawn and of Turtle Creek and Uptown. So we'd like for you to vote against this proposal. We think that the current zoning is appropriate for this location, and thank you.
Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Tracy Popkin. I live at 301 Melba Street.
I don't live in this area. I got involved because I have friends who live directly adjacent to this project, and I've been working with Amanda Popkin in community engagement, trying to pull together all the opposition for, you know, hundreds of people with various different reasons to oppose this, trying to coalesce them into one voice. Because I've been a part of other development issues like this in my home neighborhood in Bishop Arts, so I know what it's like to be pro-development and want to work with a developer and have that back and forth to see actual compromise occur, which is not really what's occurred in this instance. So I did have the really deeply impactful experience recently of being a member of the community steering committee for the City of Dallas Economic Development Plan. And as part of that experience, the Angelou Economics, who has paid an enormous amount of money to give you all advice, said that one of the primary issues with the City of Dallas is that we don't have an overarching plan that we stick to. And as part of being part of this process, I rode with the CPC on their bus to tour this project and numerous other projects. I saw the whole city basically in one day. And when you enter Oak Lawn, you can see the effect of 30 years of a cohesive plan that's been stuck to. It's stunning, and it's incredibly valuable. So as an outsider who's been involved in this for a while and cares deeply about this city, this is an example of we have a plan that's working. And community members who've invested deeply in making this plan follow through and be enormously valuable. And I think we should continue to support the Oak Lawn plan and support projects that understand and support the goals of the neighborhood and the vision of the neighborhood.
Thank you.
Next
thank you.
Speak.
There's none of these folks, right? You've all spoken? Yeah, thank you. Entertain a motion, Mr. Kingston.
Move for denial without prejudice.
Okay. Do we have a second? We've got a second. Discussion, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you all for coming down here. This project has, because of the length of time that it has taken, and because of the way that we view land use and especially proposals to change land use within PD 193, there has been an extraordinary amount of volunteer effort expended on this project. And that is the primary reason, along with the secondary reason being the overwhelming level of opposition, that I'm not willing to further drag out this case or to try to send it back for some, essentially would be about the fourth major revision if we tried to revise it again. The lesson from this exercise is that this parcel, for whatever reason, we can disagree about the reasons, and we do, is not appropriate at this time for greater density. By way of background, deals that have occurred in Ms. Gates' district, in my district, in Mr. Medrano's district, sometimes are known as assemblage deals. Typically when condominiums or townhouse developments with diverse ownership are sought to be redeveloped, it's an incredibly difficult process to pull together enough support within the diverse ownership of the property to accept a sale to a developer. That was accomplished in this case by two things that I think should give us pause when we're looking at assemblage deals in the future. One is that this condominium association adopted as its rules that no bulk sale of the property could ever be accomplished without 100% participation from the condo owners. That was not achieved in this case. There are condo owners who very much want to remain in that community, including a blind girl whose parents bought it for her so that she could live independently in a walkable neighborhood. Ow. You know, that's kind of tough. The Texas legislature, people that most of us around this horseshoe don't really support, several years ago preempted city's ability to require 100% clauses for condo and townhouse. So this project is taking advantage of a stripping away of property rights that the legislature shoved down homeowners' throats a few sessions ago. Now, if that sounds like I'm being harsh with the applicant, I hope it doesn't. Lincoln, One of the reasons this thing has been so difficult is Lincoln is that credible developer that tells the truth, that really tries to make a sensitive, context-sensitive development. Obviously, they need to make money. All developers do. But they're listening to what the neighbors are saying. They're offering an extraordinary level of affordability in the project. And I know in my brain that this project is not right for this parcel at this time. But it doesn't make me feel good to tell my friends at Lincoln that this project that they worked on for a long time is a no-go. But that's the way it is for right now. As we discussed, Jeff, this may be a situation where your investors will wind up in the future having educated everyone about what really should be here and then won't profit from it themselves, and I'm sorry about that. But this is going to take a lot. If there is ever going to be a zoning change on this parcel, and I don't know that there will be, it is going to take a lot more thought, a lot more community engagement, and a lot more effort. And there's another potential lesson here. In zoning, people frequently, for rhetorical purposes, argue to ad absurdum, or whatever it is, where you argue that everything in the future will reflect the decision made today. Zoning, legally, is not precedent setting, and there's a reason for that. It's because sometimes the fact that there's a tailor a block and a half away is a reason there shouldn't be higher, taller development on this site, because the preservation of that variation in form is healthy for the neighborhood as well. That's frustrating for owners who are looking to profit off of a speculative investment, but for people who live there, it's probably a good thing. And so that may be another lesson to learn from this process this time. But in terms of the advocates on both sides, I really, really respect all of you. You don't know really the level of sophistication that you are displaying to this council. And I mean that sincerely to both Lincoln and to the opponents. You're both very dear to me, and I am sorry that not everybody can get everything they want all the time. If I were some kind of perfect politician, I'd figure out how to do that, but I can't. So thank you for the little bit of extra time, Mr. Mayor. Please, if you all will please join me in allowing Lincoln to clean up whatever it needs to with a non-prejudicial denial to allow them to do whatever deal cleanup needs to be done, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other comments? I guess I have a question. Are you voting to deny the 15% affordable housing?
Mr. Mayor, what I meant to say was I moved to adopt the recommendation of the CPC to deny without prejudice.
On the with 15% affordable housing?
The 15% affordable housing does not change my motion.
Okay. And what if they gave the young lady a free apartment that's blind?
I think you're still 90 units short, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Just want to clarify. Let's do a record vote. If you are voting, just be clear. All right, do you want to say something?
So do we have that? I saw that there was they were willing to put 15% on the table, but there's not an option for that. I mean, nobody's made a vote.
He said even with the 15%, he's not for it. Okay?
So even if they're 15%.
I guess I have to comment. I mean, we have an affordable housing crisis in this city. And this is a moment of truth whether we're going to put affordable housing north of this city or not. And I respect all the points of view, just like Mr. Kingston said. But when we said we're going backwards and we're going to have to include affordable housing, that is not a good narrative for this city. And so I will be voting against the motion because I think affordable housing is critical throughout this city, and it needs to get in North Dallas. Whether we like it or not, it's going to happen. And we've got to start someplace, and this is a good opportunity
to do that. So that's my point of view. Ms. Gates, did I cut you off?
Yeah, I had another question, because the certainty of rezoning is a question that comes up all over the city, and I spoke with both sides and met with both sides on this issue. And there was this argument that this area is like a protected MF2. And if, you know, that, and that's a certainty, but why, in this, because it's a special district, but I think there's been in, I don't know how many cases, over the last few years that MF2 has been changed to MF3 in this special district. I mean, maybe, could you, Neva, maybe give me an estimate of how many times that has happened? And from you've worked with a lot of cases in this special district, has it been argued that this area within that district is protected? I mean, is it from any kind of zoning change?
I couldn't even hazard a guess to know how many have gone from MF to PDS or something. But if you look in your history, most of the ones that are listed here were either office or light commercial. The ones that changed around this area were not MF2.
They weren't in that immediate area. So there hasn't been, but it's just been kind of known. I mean, within the group. I mean, I'm just trying to understand it a little bit better of why. You know, is there no plan then for it to change at all? Is there any plans for it to be protected? Is there an authorized? I know there's an authorized hearing within PD 193. Is that for this area or not?
No, it's for an MF3 area. So, I mean, from staff's perspective, we look at each case individually. So just whether this is MF2 or LC or office, we look at each one individually and determine whether we think this area needs to change.
And what was your staff recommendation?
Our staff recommendation was approval, but with different conditions than what the applicant asked for.
Because what were you trying to mitigate?
We were asking for, staff recommendation, was denial without prejudice, but we provided some conditions in here for what staff would have supported as an alternative if anybody wanted to support it.
And so did they support?
Right. So CPC went, I'm sorry, I just said that wrong. Staff was.
Yeah, applicants are all shaking their heads. I'm just want to clear what.
Staff was recommending approval. We had conditions that were less in height, less density, different setbacks, and a different recommendation for the affordable housing, which they have now increased.
Which that now they have, because this is something we're looking to do.
Right.
So if there's areas that we can have density, okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Neva, Chris, if you can come up for a second. Thank you. I'm looking at the information we were given, and based on this information, it says that the opposition presented a number of recommended changes, and the applicant developer met those concerns. Are you familiar with that? Is that correct?
Right. So this case started in March of last year. It has been gone through different iterations from when it first started. Those have come from both staff and the opposition's input. That's what their applicant has reacted to as to make their changes. And so there is a little bit of change from when they first started to what they're asking for now.
Okay. The reason I asked that question is, if that's correct, kind of seems like a little moving of the goalpost. I mean, if you say, okay, we're in opposition and these are concerns, and they go back and say, okay, we're willing to meet those, and then you meet those and they say, well, now these are concerns. You know, if it's a case where you just flat out didn't want it, I think that should have been stated from the beginning. And I'm basing that on the information that I have here and information that I've been given. And so that's a cause for concern simply because of the fact that I wouldn't want someone to say these are the things that are bothering me or things that I have a problem with. Would you make these changes? And they make those changes and it's not good enough. So I just wanted to get your understanding on this in terms of the history of this case and what's going on. So
Yeah, so the applicant never met either side all the way. They did compromise and came down a little bit on the height and the number of units. So there was a little bit of movement from the applicant side.
And I didn't see anywhere in here where the opposition recommended or asked for the 15% affordable units. Was that something that the applicant offered or volunteered to do?
Right. So staff had recommended 10%, I believe, and the applicant has now, since CPC come, they were offering 5, now they're offering 15.
Okay.
But I believe the opposition would like no change. So
there
wouldn't be that play of the affordable.
Right. Well, we sit around here, you know, week after week, and we discuss, you know, the fact that we don't want to continue to put, you know, affordable housing in the areas, recap areas. This is a high opportunity area. And if the developer is willing to go exceed the 10% and go as far as 15%, I mean, at some point in time, NIMBYism's got to stop somewhere. We've got to recognize the fact that we don't want to continue to overpopulate certain areas that already have high poverty. And if there is an opportunity to provide individuals, as we say, the working poor, an opportunity to live somewhere close to where they work, I think this appears to me to be one of those opportunities. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Thinking about it, this is an uptown, is that correct?
Yes.
And that's uptown, right? And I remember back in 1968, uptown was all African American almost. You know, it was almost affordable. And now that it's not, as chair of housing economic development, you know, I do understand both sides. And I wish it was a mixed crowd out there. Workforce housing. We're trying to get people to work downtown. And we said we don't get affordable opportunity. You know, it's kind of puzzling me. And I've been saying ever since 2006, tale of two cities, north and the south. It is a tale of two cities. Everybody have a right to live where they should live in America. But we start with 10% and 15%. And could I address Mr. Kingston, please?
Please.
Mr. Kingston, suppose I offer 25%. Would that still be off the table?
Mr. Atkins, math is very difficult.
I just asked.
Math is very difficult.
I just asked. Yes or no?
25% is how many?
How many units you want?
It's 60 units, Mr. Atkins. Do you know how many affordable units are there today?
There are 100, I believe.
I like asking questions, but not for debate.
I just asked a simple question.
No, you're being quite insulting.
Okay.
We don't need any of your help here.
Mr. Atkins, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for your answer. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. But 25% of zero is zero, I guess. But we all talking about workforce housing. We're talking about people to be able to work, live, and work in a part of the city. We got business people downtown who drive there, who try to get to work, and they pay 30% of the income in transportation. That's poverty in the city of Dallas. We just heard on Martin Luther King Celebration Day about how do we grow the city. How do we work together, and how do we compromise, and how do we work? That's what I'm talking about. There's always room to negotiate, to sit down, to come up with a great answer. And I thought the city is a great city to work together, to come up, to be equal in the entire city of Dallas. And we say we do need workforce housing, affordable housing downtown. Eventually, we're going to get there. But I'm going to be voting against it. And if you come back, you know, hey, as a chair of housing, the policy, the city manager, we got to look more deeply into our housing policy to be a great city. We got to really search our heart and say, do we really, really want affordable housing throughout the city of Dallas, especially in North Dallas and especially downtown? Thank you.
Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I find the preceding remarks from my colleagues to be ridiculous, foolish, fraudulent. Raise your hand if you have approved more affordable housing in your district than we have in District 14. I don't believe you're correct, Mr. Kleinman. I believe you're under 15 units, and I think I'm over 100. So this affordable housing was never part of the decision.
Okay, Mr. Kleinman.
I mean, if he's going to call me out, I
know, but just put the light. Put your light on.
You're the liar, dude.
Hey, Mr. Kingston, we're not going to call people names.
I believe I'll do whatever I want, Mr. Mayor.
Not be in order, okay? Please.
It is... I mean, it's just facially galling. It's disingenuous. We've been trading development rights for affordable housing in District 14 for years. We've done it over and over. Many of you have voted against those deals. And to pretend that this has something to do with NIMBYism, to call my neighbors who are sitting right here NIMBYs, that is... shameful. That is not behavior consistent with being a dispassionate member of this council. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you. What really resonated, and going back to this question, I would like to ask Mr. Kingston, this district, the idea and that this is kind of protected MF2, is that the vision you see for this area? That's the most justified reason to me that you would deny the zoning. What's supposed to be there? Should it just remain MF2? Is that what you see for this, you know, kind of blocked area that's been highlighted? Could I ask you that?
I don't have a overarching vision for this property. The idea that there's a special protection beyond normal protections for this property is not really reflected in law. It's reflected in the way that PD 193 has been operated traditionally. There's only one trailside MF2 project that's ever been upzoned, I believe. And that one, as you were here, you may have recalled how close I was to being beaten to death over that project. So I would say that what we know from this case is that this vision presented this way at this time is not viable. It doesn't mean that another vision in the future won't be viable. Is that enough of an answer?
That's helpful. I mean, just because that area, I think the certainty is something that we hear constantly in all of our districts. And if, and I know zoning can always change. And but the argument was made, and I think with the Vine, people weren't going to invest in there because they assumed something else was not supported, that it wouldn't change. And I think it's not good for our city when we don't know. And then there's areas where we can have density, and with density we can have affordability, and our city can continue to grow. But if we know there's areas that's not going to be supported, we should just say that out front and not make developers go round and round for 3 years and make neighbors have to get coalitions to work for 3 years. So that's what the kind of boiling point of the frustration is, why we ended up here after 3 years.
Thank you. I just want to make one last, Mr. Callahan wants to speak. No, please.
Yeah, that's what's my concern, is that we've been at this 2 or 3 years, and, you know, if the answer was no to begin with, why are we getting planners and loggers and bringing visions and then saying, well, we don't like this, we don't like that. I mean, it's clear there's been changes. It's going from $25 million to $100 million value. You're going from 90 feet down to 70 feet. Your units are going 390 down to 307. You're getting a better setback look. You're getting great access to the Katy Trail. You're burying the power lines. There's a great deal to like about this. And then they've upped the ante on the affordability ratio. You're going from 5 to 15%. The math that Mr. Atkins was trying to get to, you know, is 25%. That's 77 units. You know, at the 15%, that's 46 units. So That does certainly help, and you're getting a brand new product, more tax value to the city so they can bring more services. You got brand new construction under warranty. Again, there's so many things to like about this, and certainly in that given vicinity, you know, high-rise buildings have been, for the last 30, 40 years, have been really the norm. You've got to add value. Property taxes are high and property insurance is high. You know, the developers got to get more return ROI on their investment. And to do that, you know, you got to put up more units. But more units is good because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get more affordable units. And so, again, rather than going down the primrose path, you know, taking developers for a ride, if you will, you know, suggesting that a certain workout could be made, I'd rather just that your yes be yes or no be no. If you just don't want it, then say, we do not want any change from the MF2, and that's end of discussion. Don't tell somebody that if you'll make these ancillary changes, then yeah, we might be able to get some support for that. So, you know, loggers and planners and architects, and this has been revised I don't know how many times, that's expensive. So let's end the expense. Let's add the value for the city. Let's bring the affordability, you know, units online, and let the city and let the people win. Thank you.
Thank you. The last point that I just wanted to say is Mr. Thomas talked about these high opportunity areas, and we have never had a project with 15% affordable housing in a high opportunity area. We've talked about raising the standard, raising the bar. This would create a new standard for all builders in the future. And to me, it really comes back to Mr. Atkins' questions. Does this council really want affordable housing? So we'll have a record vote. If you want to vote for denial, you vote for the vote yes, or you can vote no to that.
We have higher actual rates of affordability in high opportunity areas in other projects, and Mr. McGee's district ain't in mine.
In 15%?
We have 40 in Jack Matthews' New Deal.
Okay. That's up. That's up and running. Okay. Thank you. All right. Vote.
Please start voting. 10 have voted. 13 have voted. 14 have voted. 14 have voted. 14 have voted. 14 have voted. All have voted. Voting in favor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Council Members Clayton, Narvaez, Kingston, Grayson, and Griggs. Voting against, Council Members McHugh, Arnold, Mayor Pro Tem Thomas, Council Member Gates, Felder, Kleiman, Mayor Rollins, Council Member Callahan, and Atkins. The motion fails, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain another motion, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the zoning changes requested by the applicant with the following changes. In order to qualify for the increased development standards, a minimum 15% of the total dwelling units must be mixed-income housing. The rental affordability period is 15 years, beginning on the date the first affordable unit is leased to an eligible household or voucher holder, and the ordinance to return at a later date.
Thank you. Do we have a second? A second. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll take a record vote.
Please start voting. I would like to know for passage or approval, it will require 12 members voting in favor. 11 have voted. 12 have voted. 12 have voted. 13 have voted. 14 have voted.
Sorry, I thought I'd.
All have voted. Voting in favor, Council Members McHugh, Arnold, Mayor Pro Tem Thomas, Council Member Gates, Felder, Kleiman, Clayton, Mayor Rollins, Council Member Callahan, and Council Member Atkins. Voting against, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Council Members Narvaez, Kingston, Grayson, and Griggs. The motion also fails, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, so we have two motions fail. Does anybody want to make a motion to send it back to CPC?
Anybody? Anybody want to do anything?
Anybody? I'll move that we send it back to CPC, and perhaps we can get a little bit more affordable housing and maybe make some tweak adjustments to placate the neighbors and try to get a victory for the city.
Okay. Motion and second. Any discussion? Mr. Callahan, did you want to say something?
No.
Mr. Kingston, so first.
I would urge you all to vote against Mr. Callahan's motion. As I hopefully highlighted, the biggest resource that has been utilized in this case is volunteer time. This is hundreds of neighbors coming out to literally, we're up to 10 official on the record meetings and dozens of other meetings in the community. And this is the kind of thing that causes neighbors to think that people in this building who want to give developers a win will simply wear them out by requiring them to come back to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. I mean, thank God this is a night meeting and they didn't all have to take off work. So if it goes back to CPC, it's going to come back to us as a denial again. We'll have another meeting like this, and it'll still require 12 votes. It's still not going to get built. So this is an exercise in two things, delaying the inevitable and wearing out my neighbors.
Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I have some staff questions about sending it back to CPC because I got to concur with my colleague, Mr. Kingston. The CPC does not want to see this again. Mm-mm. So I guess my question is, if we send it back to CPC, do they have to have a full hearing again? We just tell them to go through the process again.
Correct. We would notice, just like we did for the first one, and see if there's any changes from the applicant, or if there were, we could bring those forward to CPC, but we'd have a new hearing.
If we reconsidered Mr. Kington's first motion for denial without prejudice, where does that leave the applicant?
Denial without prejudice means they can make a new application tomorrow.
Make a new application.
So they don't have the two-year waiting period.
So they start over, still have to go through CPC.
Right.
So is it virtually the same outcome? I mean, I realize technically it's a different thing, but they still have to go through the same process again.
Sure. I think a denial gives the applicant the indication that this wasn't the right product to bring forward, so go back and think about something else.
Right, and then if we send it back to CPC, they're just going to gyrate on the same issue over and over
again.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Excuse me, the question from Ms. Nevadeen. Excuse me. Need clarification that I would not be in favor of sending it back to CPC, but addressing the issue of how we can move it forward with consider keeping this under advisement until it can come back to the council agenda so that we could vote on it.
So the council could vote or could make a motion to hold this under advisement to a date certain. It would not go back to Plan Commission. It would just stay here and come back before this body.
All right, then I would need to get some help in drafting that so that I would like to present that motion. The motion that I've just solicited from Mrs. Nevadeen to put that forward to council to hold it under advisement so it can come back. So I don't know if that's the proper term.
Well, it is, and that's fine. Just need a date. We've got to take up Mr. Callahan's motion first. I will say that CPC did not act on this when it was 15% affordable housing. That is a new piece of information that I think our CPC group would be interested in. Mr. Callahan, did you want to?
I had a question. Would someone from Lincoln Properties address the group and indicate what they're interested in doing? Do you want to make a new application? Do you want to walk away? What do you want to do?
Please.
We'd love to have the opportunity to make a new application, and I think it'd be in our best interest to go back to CPC, whether they want to see it or not. And the reason why is if we get a positive vote, which it was only 7-5, then we don't have to have a supermajority here.
But the point is, we could choose Mr. Kingston's route with just denial without prejudice, and get you can go make that application tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's one avenue. Or you can accept mine. It's going to take you down the same. You tell me.
I think that it makes sense for us to be referred back. That gives them the indication that you guys are interested in seeing it again.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. You have some comment?
Yes.
No. No, because a council person asked.
Mr. Please. Mayor, if you remand this as it is, the request is as it is today. So if you want us to entertain something different, you would need to instruct staff to advertise something different. So that would need to be part of your motion. If you just remand
the 15% would have to be in there.
Right.
Got it. Got it. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Felder, you hadn't spoken?
Yes. Sir, would you come back to the microphone, please?
Yes.
This is a pretty tough case because of the number of times that you guys have been before CPC and also acknowledging the fact that the community is voicing serious concern. But my question to you is, would you consider anything above 15%?
I'd want to go back and look at it.
Yes.
You obviously have to look at a lot of math, as Mr. Right. Kingston mentioned and
right.
Mr. Atkins mentioned. You know, there's economic
right.
costs
so,
afforded that, and I need to make sure the equity partners and so on were comfortable with it.
Okay. So that I think that would be beneficial. I think that would be good. That would be something that probably a lot of us would be interested in. You know, a number at 20-25% would be appealing. I hear my colleagues, the concerns and the comments. You know, as a real estate broker, you know, I'd like to see more diversity throughout the city. You know, I don't. And I pride myself on being a grassroots community-based councilman. So I want the community that has come out, I want you to know that. But many times, no matter what you do, somebody's going to be upset, somebody's going to be disappointed, somebody's going to be mad. But at the end of the day, we're trying to reach a compromise. And that's what's going to have to happen here. Nobody is going to win and get everything that they want. I clearly understand that, and I see that now. But what we need to do for this city, for this community, is to find a way to get as many affordable units as possible in the complex, so that you have a balance. You have a balance because you have opposition. You have strong opposition. I can clearly see it and hear it. But I'm seeking a balance. I'm seeking some middle ground. You know, some middle ground so that there will be less acrimony, less disappointment. So please give it your strongest consideration. Thank you, sir.
We look forward to talking to all of you and getting your input.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Callahan, did you say it's not open mic, sir? They were asking him a question. Mr. Callahan, did you say you wanted to do something with your motion?
I think it might be in our best interest for me to withdraw my motion and instead consider Mr. Kingston's original motion, because that allows them to go back and make a brand new application tomorrow. It just cuts to the chase and allows them to go back. And if they want to bring in another component, either 15 or 20 or some other figure,
well,
they can do that.
Fine. So
point.
His motion is withdrawn. Ms. Arnold wanted to make a motion.
Could I ask a question before the
please.
Motion? Please. I mean, as comment number one, my understanding into the reading is that this particular project does not include any tax credits.
No.
And so the second comment, of course, speaking to my fellow council member Felder, is correct. in trying to get compromise and balance, I believe, is the more we get.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry, point of order, and it's nothing against you, Ms. Arnold, but okay. There's no motion on the floor.
No, she's asking a question for clarification.
Right, but we have no motion on the floor, so we should only be discussing a motion on the floor at this time.
I
understand what you're saying, Mayor, but I'm just
I got
giving
it.
A point of order.
I was trying to answer
point
a question.
Point of information,
then.
That
Thank
would
you.
Be a point of information. So my question, motion? Moving forward, then, I would see clarity on an advisement. Would that give us a chance to get more information to council members before we vote? Is that what that would include, that period? Was that do the
no,
attorney
gonna,
ask that question?
No,
to get my motion, I'm asking for advice.
You can say you want a motion to defer to a certain date.
Basically, yes. I just wanted clarity on the advisement period.
Grab a date and make the motion if that's what you want. Do you have a date?
Sir, let me just try to put on my glasses so I can hear. I think this is just kind of one of those periods of night where it's like there's so much going on. So if I want to be supportive of the developer and I want to move forward on this project so we're not straggling out for four more years, so my recommendation, we could vote it up or down, would be to put this on advisement, come back at the end of February. Would that be February the 28th, I believe?
27th.
There's a council meeting on the 27th? There we go. We've got a motion. Do we have a second? We've got a second. Motion and a second. So the motion is to move for deferral till the 27th. Okay? We'll be discussing that. Ms. Arnold, any comments? You're like so. Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Point of information, Mayor. This motion, is it? We're just bringing back the exact same motion back
yes.
on the 27th? Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Which bring it back?
She's saying to take this item and defer it till the 27th since we did not.
We already voted this item.
Yeah, that well, I know, but we did not get any conclusion. There was no conclusion.
Conclusion, which was. Is that. What?
She can make that motion, okay? Since no motion has passed, she can make that motion, okay? All right, Mr. Kingston.
There are two legal reasons why this would take a supermajority to pass. Instead of talking about the legal reasons, let's talk about the meritorious reasons. There's overwhelming opposition to this project. Don't fool yourself. If you vote to approve this project, you are voting against. I have not seen a level of written opposition in terms of ballots returned, both compared to the ones in favor and compared to the total ballots sent out, maybe ever. That this is incredibly strong written opposition. If you are of the mind to tell yourself that those people don't know what's best for their neighborhood, for whatever reason, they were deceived, they're not smart, whatever, I think they hear you. I think they're sitting out there and I think they hear you. Let's talk about the legal reasons, though. One is the overwhelming written opposition, the ballots that were returned, and the other is the negative vote of CPC. So, for instance, if Lincoln were to return to CPC and somehow manage to talk a plan commissioner into flipping his or her vote, perhaps with some help from the direct orders of council members, I've heard that's happened from time to time, then it would still return here needing a supermajority to pass. If Ms. Arnold delays this for a period of time and it comes back, it will still need a supermajority to pass. And, you know, your crystal ball is as good as mine, colleagues, so don't let this sound like I'm telling you what's going to happen. But it seems to me the outcome will be the same. I urge you to conserve the energy of the parties at this point. I am re-urging my motion to adopt the CPC recommendation of denial without prejudice, giving Lincoln the maximum flexibility. If you guys let this die with no motion passing, it can't come back for 2 years. And that's not a good outcome. So I'm not telling you I told you so, but I think we need to go back to my original motion, please. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Why don't we, are we going to talk about Ms. Arnold's motion? Because we can, her motion was deferral. We can just vote on that.
Who seconded that, by the way?
Mr. Thomas.
Okay.
Okay. No, I don't think so. He said to go back to his original one, which we voted on.
I re-urge my motion to adopt CPC recommendation of denial without prejudice. Yeah.
But we've already voted on that.
We have to vote on hers.
Are you gonna call people in order? Because we've had a lot of conversation. Right,
I was
waiting
just
patiently.
Asking. I got it. I am. Okay. And Mr. Kleiman, you're up next.
Motion for reconsideration.
Okay.
Second.
All right. So,
help me. Do we need to take up Ms. Arnold before the reconsideration?
Reconsideration first. All vote on reconsideration. He voted against Mr. Kingston's. Okay.
And prevailed.
All right. And so he's asking for a reconsideration.
Of that vote, so that potentially we could vote on Mr. Kingston's motion again, so that we could just deny without prejudice and give, and they can come back.
Okay. All right. Let's vote on that. Okay.
Please start voting. Ten have voted. 12 have voted. 13. 13 have voted. 14. All have voted. Voting in favor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Councilmembers McHugh, Arnold, Mayor Pro Tem Thomas, Councilmember Gates, Felder, Kleiman, Clayton, Narvaez, Kingston, Callahan, Griggs, Grayson, and Atkins. Voting against, Mayor Rollins. The motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Then we will reconsider, right? Because Mr. Kingston. So let's vote on that.
Please start voting.
Without.
Denial without prejudice. 9 have voted. 12 have voted. 13 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 have voted. 14 have voted. All have voted. Voting in favor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Councilmembers Arnold, Thomas, Gates, Felder, Kleiman, Clayton, Narvaez, Kingston, Callahan, Grayson, Griggs. Voting against, Councilmembers McHugh, Mayor Rollins, and Councilmember Atkins. The motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We will take up item 39.
Agenda item 39 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development district for IR industrial research district uses, a costume rental and theater.
If we could leave without talking, I'd appreciate it. Guys, thank you.
A costume rental and theater supply store and an indoor golf facility on property on the southwest corner of Wyclef Avenue and Monitor Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 60 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 15 replies in favor and one in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Narvaez.
Move approval.
And a motion is second. Any discussion? Mr. Griggs.
Oh, thank you. Just a question for Councilmember Narvaez. Is this a costume rental and indoor golf facility? It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, this item is really, really exciting for the Design District North. What it is it's an indoor golf facility that has, like, the virtual golf. It'll have small bar areas. So kind of think of indoor karaoke, except for golfing. So it's really going to be this exciting new place that'll work with all the microbreweries in the area. The residents in Design District North are really excited about this item coming. The developer has worked with the community, done a couple of meetings with them, and there's been nothing but excitement, and when is this going to open so that they can start having their golfing stuff happening there. And then the costume part is, you know, right next door, but it all ends up working out together. So costume golfing parties, y'all.
Costume rental and indoor golf.
That's right.
You have my support.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda item 40 is a public hearing regarding a city plan commission authorized hearing to determine proper zoning on property zone conservation district number one, conservation district number 12, the Belmont Edition conservation district with modified delta overlay number one on a portion with consideration given to amending density requirements to allow accessory dwelling units as regulated in sections 51A-4.510 in an area generally bounded by lots on both sides of Llano Avenue, Skillman Street, the lots on both sides of Belmont Avenue, excluding the south side of Belmont Avenue between Greenville Avenue and Matilda Street and Greenville Avenue, and an ordinance granting the amendment.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 652 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 63 replies in favor and 51 in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have one speaker. We have two speakers.
Please.
You may come forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Thank you for having me. My name is Harley Coswith. My husband, Blaine Balch, and I live at 5832 Goliad in the Belmont Edition. We've lived in a 1913 bungalow in Belmont Edition for 13 years. Vibrant communities have diversity. Diversity in age, occupation, income, stage of life, etc. East Dallas is gentrifying, therefore supporting diversity requires smaller, affordable housing options. ADUs can accommodate young professionals, young couples, students, seniors, single parents, service industry employees, and others with modest incomes. It would allow people who otherwise could not afford a home in our neighborhood to use the income from an ADU to bridge the gap. In addition, it gives current residents lifestyle options. Having an ADU would have saved my husband and I $20,000 in rent when we moved out of our house in 2016 for eight months to renovate. As we age and if we wish to downsize, we could move into an ADU on our property and rent our 2,600 square foot home for the income. One neighbor is considering a home office above the garage. Another neighbor may have adult children returning to the nest. My husband and I are active volunteers in our neighborhood and have been dialoguing with neighbors for several months. We know that there is a strong base of support for ADUs in the Belmont Edition. Approving ADUs will encourage diversity, give people affordable housing opportunities, and make the fabric of the Belmont Edition even more beautiful. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak, and Mayor, if it permits, I'd like to concede the rest of my time to my neighbor, Marla Pittman.
Next speaker.
I almost can't see over the podium. My name is Marla Pittman. I live at 5908 Belmont in Belmont Edition Conservation District. My husband, Mark Gilchrist, and I have lived there since 2010. Like Ms. Coswith, we have a craftsman bungalow. Our home was built in 1918. We are currently renovating it, and we would truly enjoy moving forward with building a garage and a garage apartment in the future. I would like to point out that the numbers aren't exactly accurate with regard to ballots. There were 19 additional ballots and or affidavits delivered today that you guys should have gotten in your email. With those 19 additional favorable ballots, it actually brings the number to 66% of the BACD residents who voted are in favor of this proposition. I'd like to thank City Council for passing the ADU overlay that allows neighborhoods like ours to seek your consent to build ADUs, and we are in favor of it. A couple of things that I would like to also point out, as Ms. Coswith pointed out, this would allow bringing more affordable housing into our neighborhood. Many of the council members, including you, Mayor Rawlings, pointed out that affordable housing is a high priority concern. If that's the case, then this proposition for our neighborhood that the majority of the people who voted are in support of should pass. And again, a number of you, you know, expressed concern about affordable housing. We're trying to do that. For my husband and I, we have a very small home, and we're seeking to expand that space by a garage apartment. We're not going to be seeking to rent our home, but we would like to build bigger than 25% of our square feet, of the square footage of our home. Some of the opposition has expressed concern with regard to parking. In our situation, we will actually be building a garage, which will take us off the street parking into a garage parking, and then to have a garage apartment over, an apartment over the garage. So for these reasons, and because the majority of the people in our neighborhood who voted in support, we ask for your support in passing this proposition. Thank you.
No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Mr. Kingston.
Move approval.
Motion second. Discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you all for coming down. That's exactly what I would have said about these, and I'm very happy to see this taking shape. This is the first one under the ADU overlay. Mr. Griggs was successful in passing a large swath of ADU-compatible neighborhoods in the Oak Cliff Gateway rezoning, and that's what actually gave me the idea. So thanks, Scott. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just had a question for Neva. So I'm glad we passed this opportunity to have neighborhoods be able to have these overlays. I know this is the first neighborhood that's taken advantage of that opportunity, and I just had a couple questions. And I'm thrilled you said that 66% of the neighborhood, because I was doing a little calculation, I think there was 685 parcels in this neighborhood.
Well, we noticed 652.
Okay. Oh, 652 property, and then, but somehow, I guess some people might own more than one parcel, so it was 685 parcels. But I only saw that 35 were in favor, and then they said we had an additional 19 come in today, and that's 54. That's not nearly 66%. So do you know how they came up with that calculation?
I think she said it's the number of the people who voted, not the total.
Oh, not the total. Okay. So how are we assured that everybody was informed about this zoning change?
So there were signs posted in the neighborhood before it went to CPC, and then we've sent out two notices to properties for the CPC hearing and council, and then we sent out notices to just those within the conservation district for our community meeting in October.
And how many people attended? I bet you actually sent me the list. I think you had 21 people.
About 20 signed in, but I think there were more than that. I don't think everybody signed in. Because when I came at the end, there seemed to be more than 20 in the room.
Okay. And when I read the opposition, they were concerned about parking. And I saw that the CPC, this went through CPC. This wasn't driven as an application by a neighborhood. It was the CPC authorized hearing process that got us to here. And the authorized hearing, there was some, it didn't pass, CPC was almost a divided vote because they were concerned about the parking. And now there's another CPC authorized hearing regarding parking in this neighborhood that just was, I think, passed last week. Is that correct?
Correct.
So was there any discussion about bringing these forward together so they could deal with the parking at the same time as this?
No, I think so this really isn't an overlay because it couldn't do the overlay because of one of the provisions in the conservation district. So instead of amending the conservation district and then putting an overlay on top, staff felt that it would just be cleaner just to amend the conservation district to allow the ADU that refers back to what's in the code. So it's kind of like having the overlay but not really having an overlay. It has the same regulations. I think the thought at CPC was just to go ahead and approve the ADU and deal with the parking later. You know, if people want to go ahead and do the ADU with the regulations that are still in place today where they can only have an entry on one side, either the alley or the street, they're able to if they want to wait until the authorized hearing gets through the queue of the authorized hearings. Then.
So when is that authorized hearing? I mean, when are you expecting that parking issue to be taken up?
It's on the bottom of the queue for conservation or for authorized hearings.
So there could be a lot of ADUs being before there's sure. any mm-hmm. with
if they
the
can meet the regulations that are in here, they could go forward tomorrow or Monday.
Okay, that just I I mean, that's not very many people that spoke out that are impacted by this. I know, Mr. Kingston, this is in your district, obviously. Is it? It's in your neighborhood as well. I saw. I think you're on the notification list. Is that correct? So you're championing this. It's in your district. You feel like it's supported.
I'm sorry.
You're championing this. It's in your district. You feel like it's supported by your neighborhood. Your name's on the notification list. You can vote on this, I'm assuming. Are you allowed to vote on that? You're in the notification zone. Your name's on the notification.
I don't understand your question.
So are you allowed to champion this and vote on this today?
I don't understand your question.
You're not conflicted?
I'm not conflicted.
You're not conflicted when... Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Is that it, Ms. Gates? Thank you. Just to be clear, we can rent you. If I live there, I can rent these things out to other people, right? And make money, right? Okay, good. Thank you. That was a nod of a head in the back. I just want to be clear. It's not just for family members. I can rent them and make money. Okay. Thank you. All in favor, say aye. Aye. Any opposed? One opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 42, it's a public hearing and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for the sale of alcoholic beverages in conjunction with a general merchandise or food store 3,500 square feet or less on property on the north side of West Camp Wisdom Road, east of Marvin D. Love Freeway, U.S. 67.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 8 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received 0 replies in favor and 1 in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? You may come forward. Be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
I think I'll take 3 minutes. Carl Crawley, 900 Jackson Street, representing the applicant in this request. This was delayed from December. We had a neighborhood meeting. I believe it was a cold evening, as I recall, at the Executive Airport. We had a bunch of neighbors. I think we had a wonderful meeting, probably one of the better meetings. We had an open discussion. We just talked and talked and talked, and I think it came away the neighbors are pleased with the operator that's going to be there, and he's working with the neighborhood. So I just ask that you follow the Planning Commission recommendation. Thank you.
Any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Mr. Thomas.
I move to approve the zoning changes recommended by the City Planning Commission.
And a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I got something, man.
Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, I just want you to know the reason we delayed this last month to today was I wanted to have an opportunity to meet with the community. I currently don't have a plan commissioner. I have someone who's in process. But I didn't have a plan commissioner at the time, and so I became the plan commissioner. I wanted to make sure, because we're talking about a location that's potentially selling beer and alcohol, and I wanted to check and make sure we wouldn't have any issue with loitering, and we got all the crime reports and everything. And as Ms. Crawley said, we had the neighborhood meeting, and we walked out, and everybody was very much in support of it. And so we have no opposition from the community. I ask that you support this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 43 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development subdistrict for GR General Retail Subdistrict uses on property on the north corner of Amelia Street and Maple Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 37 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. You're given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Mr. Mayor, my name is Robert Reeves, 900 Jackson Street, Suite 160 in Dallas, representing the applicant. Our goal with this zoning change is to build a European-style cafe restaurant at the corner of Maple and Amelia. We had 3 neighborhood meetings to work with a series of conditions. There are 3 folks down here that were with that neighborhood group. I'd like to then just raise their hand that are in support of this. We went to the Oak Lawn Committee twice. They're in support of this. The staff support and unanimous CPC recommendation. We ask for you to support the recommendation of the commission. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion from Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve this motion, but before I do, I just want to thank the neighbors for working on this. They did a great job working with the developer. It's right now what's there is awful, and so it's going to be awesome to have a small bar and a restaurant there and some other retail. So, again, thank you all for always helping out over there in the area at Maple Springs. Thank you.
Got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? I don't hear any. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 44 is a public hearing to receive comments on the proposed City of Dallas FY 2018-19 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan, and upon the close of the public hearing, approval of the City of Dallas FY 2018-19 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on the item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. No action is necessary here. Right?
We need to close the public hearing.
Do. Mr. Atkins.
To close the public hearing.
We've got a motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, this ends your session.
Do we have any other speakers for the morning?
Yes, we'll move to the open microphone session. We have two remaining speakers, William Hopkins, not present. Richard Gallagher,
not present.
Not present.
Okay.
This concludes the open microphone speakers.
Thank you. Meeting's adjourned, 8:04 p.m. Thank you, guys. Did good. Excuse me, one thing, and if you can do this on the record. I was informed by the city manager that the next Wednesday's city council briefing meeting will be canceled because some items are not ready and we will not be having that meeting. So next Wednesday at all. Well, you're supposed to come to the office and sit in your office, but we're not going to have a city council briefing meeting.